get out of my pub, a growing number of publicans banning Labour MPs. James Fowler runs the Larder House in Bournemouth.
So it just seems like they're taxing the licensed industry. Now we need to cause a stir because it's just not fair.
I think it's a small sacrifice on them, but we want this message to go back to central government.
A pledge from the government to halve rough sleeping and prevent thousands more from becoming homeless. But how exactly will it work? You'll hear from a government minister. Plus, the president seems to care sweet FA for football fans.
The Department of Homeland Security says it plans to require visa-free tourists from dozens of countries to provide a five-year social media history in order to enter the country.
Quite a penalty if you want to go to next year's World Cup. News is next on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the British Medical Association has agreed to put a new government offer to resident doctors in England. The proposals, including an expansion of training places, are aimed at averting a pre-Christmas strike. LBC's Guy Stewart has more.
Resident doctors represented by the BMA will vote online on this deal over the coming days, with the survey closing on Monday, just 2 days before the strike is due to happen. Health Secretary Wes Streeting says it is a comprehensive deal which delivers on tackling competition from overseas. Of course, job security being a big reason for this strike. The union has been heavily criticised for organising one during a winter already seeing unprecedented demand. It says this fresh deal is precisely because of the threat of a walkout. Guy Stewart, LBC, University College London Hospital.
Flu cases in England are at their highest level on record for this time of year. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has warned of an ongoing sharp rise in cases, with a peak still to come. There has been another escalation in tensions between the US and Venezuela. It's after American troops stormed and seized an oil tanker off the coast of the South American country. Officials say it was carrying sanctioned oil, but Venezuela has called the seizure an act of international piracy. Defence analyst Colonel Simon Diggins says it's the latest part of a US pressure campaign.
The largest, most powerful aircraft carrier in the world. He moved all the way from the Mediterranean to the Caribbean. We've also seen the sinking of alleged drug runner boats by the US Navy. And it essentially has declared Venezuela a narcotic state.
Ministers have unveiled a new strategy to tackle homelessness. It aims to halve the number of long-term rough sleepers in the next 5 years and reduce reliance on B&Bs for temporary accommodation. But some charities have warned it falls short of what's needed to tackle a housing crisis. And The Newsagent has won Best Podcast Show at the first ever Global Player Awards. Christiane Amanpour presents The X-Files with Jamie Rubin, picked up the biggest new podcast. The awards celebrate the most listened to artists, podcasts and new music acts. And you can see the full list of winners on Global Player. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 96.55 after closing up 13 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and the euro 14. LBC weather dry and bright for most places, becoming cloudier through the day with rain arriving in Scotland and Northern Ireland later. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
This Christmas at Tesco, get a sharing bag of Doritos Chilli Heatwave for just £1.45, down from £2.50 with your Tesco Club card. Finding great prices, that's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of large stores, Doritos 180 grams and 2nd of January. Club card or app required.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven, Thursday, December the 11th, an almost last-minute attempt to try and halt the doctor's strikes with a better offer. We'll give you details of that offer. Remind you, of course, that's just days away. We're also in this flu epidemic or pandemic. Which way will the doctors go? Which way should the doctors go? We'll speak to a senior member of the BMA and, of course, take your views. In other news, good Lord. Sir Keir Starmer sending more people to the House of Lords. But only a few years ago, as leader of the opposition, he said...
Labour will rebuild trust by reforming the centre of government and replacing the unelected House of Lords with a new, smaller, democratically elected second chamber.
Do you think he can lie straight in bed now? It's utterly untrue. We'll look at that in more detail. Labour's grotesque puberty drug experiment on children is how some people are describing this. By the way, except if troubled children, some as young as 10, will be given hugely powerful drugs. How can that work? Back in 2024, after her landmark review, Baroness Cass said children experiencing gender dysphoria should receive a range of treatments, but not just drugs.
This is not about taking care away from them. Hormone treatments may be appropriate, but keeping their options open is a key part.
The homelessness crisis, so acute and really front of mind when it comes to something such as Christmas. A government initiative to try and tackle it, you'll hear from the relevant minister. And we say farewell, all too young, to a great writer. Here's a clip from the trade of Confessions of a Shopaholic, based on the books by Sophie Kinsella, who's died just 55.
You know that thing when you see someone cute and he smiles and your heart kind of goes like warm butter sliding down hot toast? Well, that's what it's like when I see a store.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Could it be called off? Next week's strike by resident doctors in England averted after ministers offered the BMA, British Medical Association, a fresh deal. And you'll hear from a senior member of the BMA in just a few moments' time. Now, the doctors' union has agreed to put the offer to members over the coming days if they support it. The five-day walkout, starting, of course, Wednesday of next week, could be called off. Let's go back to last month when the resident doctors, once, of course, junior doctors, staged their last wave of industrial action. Health Secretary Wes Streeting was here in the studio and had taken your calls and had received a call from a resident doctor, Niraj in Harrow, who was saying he was going to take industrial action. This was the Health Secretary's punchy response.
To hold patients to ransom and to be out on strike setting back the NHS because you don't think we're going fast enough and because the leadership of your union are not honest enough that some of this change takes time is extremely irresponsible. It is extremely unnecessary. And the other listeners to this show who have not had a 28.9% pay rise, whose taxes are paying for our National Health Service and who are receiving a substandard service, not least because of the damage that these rounds of industrial action are doing, I think they will be quite shocked, actually, that against the backdrop of a health secretary that wants to work with you, who acknowledges these are challenges and wants to address them, and has given you the biggest pay rise in the public sector 2 years in a row, I think people will be shocked by the BMA's reprehensible behaviour. So don't tell me you don't want to be out on strike, because that's exactly where you are. You made that choice, own it, and own the damage it will do to your patients.
Well, let's move on from that. But that was Wes Streeting, as I say, talking directly to one doctor. Now, with help from members of the BMA and others, we've been able to tell you that there are two main claims here. One is regarding pay. And I think a lot of us find it very difficult, really, to support that when you consider that they've had effectively a 29% increase since 2023. The other, though, I've always said seems far more valid, which, if I'm getting my numbers right, roughly 30,000 doctors every year chase as few as 10,000 places. There is no progression for this fantastic body of men and women who've worked and trained and studied damned hard and then save us. So what about the change in tone? Well, here's the Health Secretary last night offering a fresh deal, including emergency legislation to prioritise UK medical graduates for speciality training roles, an increase in training posts over the next 3 years. Wes Streeting explaining the offer in this video and social media.
In order to avoid the enormous damage and risk that would come with strikes ahead of Christmas, we've been talking to the BMA to make them an offer that would deal with what I think are the legitimate concerns that doctors have about the lack of training places to apply to. So we're announcing that we will bring forward emergency legislation that will mean that UK doctors get first priority on those training places. And we're also proposing to increase the number of specialty training places that we'd offered from an extra 1,000 to an extra 4,000. And on pay, although I've been consistent and honest, we can't afford to do more this year than the 28.9% pay rise that doctors have already had from this government. What we will do is put some more money back in their pockets by cancelling a number of fees that only resident doctors are subjected to. And so this is a good deal for doctors, and it offers us the chance to end strikes before Christmas and start the new year on a new page.
West Streeting. Let's get straight to the BMA. Dr. Arjan Singh is Deputy Chair of the BMA's Residents Doctors Committee. Fairly brief question to you, sir. Is the deal enough? Morning.
Good morning. So the government's given us an offer that largely doesn't have movement on pay, but there is a significant offer on jobs. And that's what we are doing. We are surveying our membership at the moment to determine if that offer goes far enough to call off next week's strike action. To break down the jobs offer, because it is incredibly confusing, there is no net increase in the number of jobs for doctors. So that 4,000 increase in specialty training posts, that's resulted from taking away 4,000 doctor posts in the country as well. So there is no net increase in the number of jobs available for doctors. So that paradoxical situation that we have, where demand to see a doctor has increased dramatically, where people are waiting in corridors in A&E in years for routine surgeries, that's not going to change because the total number of jobs for doctors remains the exact same.
What about training places, doctor? I read that that has been doubled from 1,000 to 2,000. Is that again playing with figures, or is that the reality?
So they have increase the number of specialty posts. And those are the posts that you require to become the GP and the consultant of the future. What they've also suggested and explained is that these will be prioritised for, you know, UK graduates and other groups. But that prioritisation is incredibly unclear to our membership. What we've been told in the room is that that is an incredibly strong form of UK graduate prioritisation, which is the only way to solve the jobs crisis. The data that we've seen shows that, but we have not been able and allowed to share that data with our membership, and the government's statement on what this prioritisation looks like is unclear, and thus our members are incredibly confused whether this will address the problem. So I would implore the government to share that data with our membership, because right now they can't make heads or tails of whether this goes far enough.
So, doctor, what's your diagnosis or prognosis? Will it be accepted or rejected?
I think 90% of our membership were balloted on pay, and there's obviously no significant movement at all on pay. And in terms of jobs, whilst the solution that they've described to us in the room, you know, would go a significant way, that's not been relayed to members by the government.
Oh dear.
So I don't understand how our members are meant to analyse this information.
Oh dear. Gloomy words from a doctor. Finally, the timing. I understand we will get your result, well, not your result, the result of your colleagues, on Monday. If that is correct, I mean, surely we have to have some concern for the people who are trying to run hospitals through the very tough time of winter and with flu, because they're going to have to try and cancel holidays and schedule doctors from other areas. You're only given 2 days' notice.
So we've been in contact with NHS, and actually the way that we are running this indicative ballot of our members is that should members say yes, call off strike action, we will be able to get our resident doctors back to work if required and be able to reinstall elective activity. That's why we have such a short turnaround time. I will say these are timelines that have been enforced upon us. We've been asking for these talks for months and months. Right. It's not up to us to have done this at this stage. The government did say they were going to give this offer regardless, and that's why we've been put in this position. But let me be clear, there is no net increase in jobs.
Okay, really grateful for you going through the numbers for me. I have to move on to get others involved. Thank you, Dr. Arjan Singh, your deputy chair of the BMA's Resident Doctors Committee. He's far closer to it than I. He's absolutely right. I've got the numbers in front of me in a very lengthy piece in The Guardian. It strikes me like mass double maths or mass homework. I can't really follow it all. But let's turn to Leila Mackay, Director of Policy of the NHS Confederation, speaking for healthcare system across the whole of the country. But obviously we're focusing because of devolution on doctors in England. I don't know whether you, as ever, the devil is in the detail. I don't know how you want to respond that effectively we're not moving forward, as we heard from the representative of the BMA. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Well, I would say that across the whole country, healthcare leaders are very much hoping that the resident doctors will look properly and carefully at this offer, because in fact, they have asked for a range of things that do appear to be addressed in this offer. And honestly, if they do go ahead with these strikes, which have been specifically chosen at this moment, where flu is rising fast, incredibly busy time of the year, right before Christmas, it is a time that is going to cause particularly high amounts of disruption that will be felt by patients and, of course, will be very difficult to manage by staff. And right now, healthcare leaders, managers across the system are trying to figure out how they're going to staff the whole system as safely and effectively as possible. Obviously, they've had experience of this. There's been previous strikes by the resident doctors, and they have been able to achieve that. But it does come at the expense of disruption and really quite significant costs to the health system as well.
Can you tell me, or more importantly, my listeners, have they increased the number of doctors' jobs, as they say, or have they not, as my as the representative from the BMA? Leila, which is it?
Well, I'm not the absolute expert in this maths.
You're not Carol Vorderman of Countdown, then. You can't solve
exactly,
it for me.
But from what I see right now, while the number of posts may be the same, more of them will be available to doctors in the UK. That is my interpretation, although I am not the expert in this. So it does appear that the government has listened to the specific challenge of not enough training places being available to doctors and has come up with ways to expand the number of training places available to doctors. That is my interpretation.
Finally, within the NHS, I remind my listeners, resident or junior doctors have been on strike 13 times since March 2023. They've withdrawn their labour for 49 days. What's the rest of the NHS's mood towards that?
I mean, it's just hugely frustrating that this has not yet been resolved so that everybody can move on. The NHS has got some very, very high expectations of how they're supposed to reduce the waiting lists and get people seen as quickly as possible, get people into the hospital and out of the hospital when they're well again. And things like this just clog up the whole system. They cause a lot of expense, they cause a lot of stress, a lot of patient disruption, postponed and cancelled appointments. It is hugely frustrating for everyone. So I think that it is in the interest of everyone to find a solution to this and end this cycle of strikes that we are seeing right now.
Grateful for your time, Leila Mackay. We'll leave it there. Thank you, your Director of Policy at the NHS Confederation. I do have to get a move on. And of course, it's very simple. Yes or no. There does seem to be movement on jobs, but then we hear there's not. We probably need an analysis on it, but we will, of course, take your calls. In other news, or rather, antisocial approach to social media.
Passport, ticket, social media history. The US authorities plan to demand access to 5 years of your activity on Instagram, Twitter, and other platforms before issuing a permit to enter America. I'm Simon Calder, travel correspondent for The Independent, and I'm speaking to Nick shortly.
Looking forward to speaking with Simon about that. And the message from a growing number of publicans to Labour MPs.
Get out of my pub!
But why are they saying that? The 7:15 LBC News headlines are next with Thomas Watts.
Resident doctors in England are to take part in an online poll to decide whether or not to go ahead with a pre-Christmas strike. Venezuela's accused the US of piracy after American troops stormed and seized an oil tanker. Ministers have unveiled a long-awaited strategy aimed at halving rough sleeping. LBC weather dry and bright for many places, becoming cloudier with rain in the west later on. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the trains, no Gatwick Express services running at all. The entire line is suspended. It's because the overnight works are still taking place, which also means that southern trains are delayed by about 20 minutes to and from Victoria. On the underground, the northern line is currently suspended between High Barnet and Finchley Central. That's after a signal failure. There are severe delays on the central line and minor delays on the circle line. On the roads, long delays on the M1 northbound to junction 12 at Flitwick. There's a load of debris across the road. On the M25, anti-clockwise queues of about 40 minutes to junction 26 at Waltham Abbey. It's because a lorry has broken down and one lane is closed.
This is LBC.
For everyone who made your year, there's a Moonpig. Like your mum, who wraps all the presents way past midnight. Your hairdresser, who squeezed you in before the Christmas due. Or your neighbour who takes in all your Christmas deliveries. So add stickers, photos and videos. All these special touches at no extra cost. In the UK's most personalised card. Because this Christmas, everyone deserves a
Moonpig.com.
Delivery charges apply. To verify, see moonpig.com/personalised.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like.
from real Octopus Energy calls.
Your customer service was tip top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
The customer service was really good.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Airalo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Morrison's, our Christmas centrepieces are better than half price. Pick up a British beef joint for £6.49 per kilo, a whole leg of lamb for £7.50 per kilo, or British pork loin for £3.75 per kilo. Morrison's, making more of Christmas. Majority of stores and online excludes Morrison's Daily. Max 4 in store 2 online was £8 to £19 per kilo. Ends 24th of December.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
20 minutes after 7, coming to your reaction to the doctor's strike. Just a quick look at some of the front pages, and this is front page news for two of the newspapers. Fresh deal to avert doctor's strike offers opportunity but not cash, says the Times. Attempt to halt doctor's strikes with better offer is the Guardian. I've read both of those now. I've read them both in full. Well, I've read the Guardian already. I've read the Times again. I can't tell you the truth about whether they've cooked the books as regards the number of jobs available, whether it's the truth that the BMA is saying or the truth is what the government is saying. I do not know which way to advise you. I can tell you, though, that each strike costs, it is estimated, it costs the country about £500 million, and they've had 49 of them. Well, you'll have your own views on that. Other front pages, the Daily Mirror, £3.5 billion war on homelessness. And we'll be speaking to the government minister about that later in the hour, exactly how they hope to achieve that. And good luck to them. We'd all want it to work. The Daily Mail, a very punchy front page, stop Labour's what is called grotesque puberty drug experiment on children. This is the view of a Conservative. This is the idea of giving these fairly strong puberty blockers to, I think it's fair to say that if any child is perhaps experiencing gender dysphoria, it's fair to say they are in some way troubled. I don't think that's unfair. So to give a troubled 10-year-old those sort of drugs, how do they provide consent at the age of 10? The parents do it? Weird one, isn't it? We're looking at that later in the show. And congratulations to Davina, who has married her long-time partner. Telly favourite, as the Sun says, Davina McCall, wedding for the third time. Hairdresser Michael Douglas. We wish him the best of fortune there. And Davina, of course, continued good health. To the LBC app, which is telling you the story of the moment the US seizes a tanker off the coast of Venezuela, as unfortunately hostilities seem to increase there. And lastly, the front page, the Sky News front page, I was trying to say here, there's got more details there of the latest number of people who've arrived, the visa overstayers who laugh at soft Britain. It's an exclusive report over there. All right, let's get to the views. So they're not going to get more money. They're going to get the cancellation of fees, which the BMA says doesn't really amount to a hill of beans. And the government says they're going to get more jobs, but the BMA says they're simply moving the deck chairs. Nigel in Mayfair, well, what would you hope happens now? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Ferrari.
Hello, sir.
I'm very disappointed at doctors going on strike yet again. I think they're lazy, I'm sorry to say.
Oh, this. No. You can say that, but I don't agree for a second, but go ahead.
Well, hang on a second. If you remember, during COVID, they couldn't be bothered to see anybody. When you were working, I was working, firemen were working, loads of other people were working, but they weren't working.
Well, hold on. I really want to have this conversation, because you're a bright bloke, and I always enjoy speaking with you. But bear in mind, many of them would have probably died if they kept their surgeries open. The sort of jobs that you and I were doing weren't putting us directly in front of sick people.
But hang on a second. I'm sorry, that's a bit flippant, and I'm sorry to say that, because you could say a lot of other people may have died who drove buses, who drove trains, who flipped burgers, who worked in sandwich shops, who cleaned the streets of police officers, who came into contact with people. The argument about lockdown, we can go forever about that.
I was going to say, we were not alone. Similar medical positions were put in policy across Europe, the way people saw doctors or didn't see doctors, because we needed to keep them alive, no?
But how many people could die who couldn't see doctors, Nick?
I don't know if we'll ever have that figure, Nigel. I don't know.
Okay, all right. But going on to the about doctors, when you become a doctor in this country or anywhere in the world, you know the remuneration package you're going to get, first of all.
Mm.
And you also know the amazing remuneration package you get when you retire.
Yes, they have great pension provision. Yes, you're right.
Absolutely. And when you're a GP, which people don't quite understand, you don't. The practice isn't owned by the NHS. It's privately owned, and it's contracted to the NHS. They get a fortune for running the actual practice.
Well, not sort of the junior GP, but if he/she moves into ownership of a practice, yes, and has a number of doctors. Yeah, but that's quite a way down the track. But I mean, to get there. By the way, I'm not defending them on pay. 29% pay. Most of my listeners. But as regards jobs, if it is right that 30,000 people chase 10,000 jobs and promotion is blocked because it's too expensive, that would cause any industry concern, wouldn't it, Nigel?
It would, and I think, look, as you said, 29%, it's an amazing pay grade. But one could also argue that the initial starting pay years ago and today is still too low.
But I think holding
patients to ransom and causing patients ill health and even the possibility of a patient dying, I don't think is worth going on strike for.
Nigel, punchy views, grateful for him. Let's see what others make of it. Have yourself a safe day. I was going to ask where his idea of public support was for doctors, but I think it's flat on the floor for Nigel. But do you agree? 7:25, we'll take more calls on that. Now, we've looked into it. Roughly, when you stage or when a nation stages a World Cup, you expect about 3 million people, broadly speaking, 3 million to try and watch the game. So what of the move by the United States, which, of course, co-hosts the World Cup next year, that they'll want to look at people's social media? Details now, travel correspondent for The Independent, Simon Calder, joining me. Simon, why are they looking to do this? Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, well, the whole idea is that the executive order signed by Donald Trump on the day he entered the White House for his second term said, I want foreign visitors to be vetted and screened to the maximum possible extent. In other words, they are assuming that any international visitor who wants to come to the US is quite possibly suspicious, and therefore, what are you going to do to make sure you root out the wrongings? Now, it's taken a bit of time for US Customs and Border Protection to come up with their solution to this, but they say, yep, we want to see your social media activity on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, whatever, over the past 5 years, you have to tell us the accounts that you have been looking at and using, and therefore we will go in quite possibly and think, Nick Ferrari, what has he been looking at? And the aim is, well, they say partly to corroborate your story that you are an upstanding member of the community, but also to see if there's anything of concern. And of course, all kinds of civil rights groups are imagining that people who have said perhaps unflattering things about the US president or vice president might be told, sorry, you can't have this ESTA permit, which would normally grant you entry, because we don't like what you have been saying.
Will it apply across every nation on the planet, or can we look to our special relationship for help here, Simon?
You certainly can't ask for anything in the way of help from the special relationship. It will apply to all non-visa countries, and that's the UK, the European Union, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, all the usual suspects. So, yes, and at the moment, if you have a valid ESTA, then you are possibly going to be asked on arrival to talk about your social media platforms, because that still is already happening. If you haven't yet applied but you are going to the World Cup, or indeed you're going to the theme parks of Florida or a business trip to Chicago or whatever, if you apply now, you will not be asked those questions. They're seeking views for 60 days, but it looks pretty clear that this will take effect by early next year. And as you say, England, Scotland, hopefully either Wales or Northern Ireland fans going to the World Cup might find that they've got to trawl back through those social media accounts and supply all the details to the American authorities.
But the brilliant and canny Calder, Simon Calder, a wrinkle is get it in now, get your ESTA now, you've got roughly 60 days, And if you want to go to the footy, you're in a good place. Or you want to go to Disney World or Universal Studios or whatever.
Yes, it's okay. Not going to be much fun, but it'll cost you £30, but that will be better than the alternative, which is coming soon.
Look after yourself. If I don't see you, have a happy Christmas. Thanks for all your help through the year. Simon Calder, travel correspondent for The Independent, author and broadcaster. Let's get to some of the social media views on that doctor's strike. David says, if there are no jobs for 30,000 doctors, maybe they should do something else, like every other profession has to. Well, 30,000, just to clarify, chase 10,000 jobs. That leaves roughly 20,000 out. But, David, all I would say to that is, wouldn't it be good to be able to see a doctor and have an operation where you didn't have to wait, if you're lucky, months? And in some instances, as we heard earlier, years. Wouldn't that be an idea, perhaps? Same subject. Lee says the doctors deserve our money far more than the migrants who are living in these hotels. Ken says this is funny as is. Wes Streeting, an English minister, well, actually he's a UK minister, but it's an English question or subject, calling out a doctor about telling the truth. A Westminster politician talking about the truth? What's happening? Exclamation mark. Thank you for that. We'll be taking more of your views. Also, coming up after the news, an effort to try and crack down on homelessness. It's a bold ambition. How will it be achieved? You'll hear from the relevant minister. Plus,
the gambling sector is still reeling in the fallout from Rachel Reeves' budget, with William Hill's owner saying it might have to break itself up or put itself up for sale. I'm Christian May from City AM, discussing this shortly with Nick.
Plus, the fatal and faithful acts of a jealous boyfriend.
A man is found guilty of murdering a mum and her three young children in a house fire in Bradford. I'm LBC's Alex Taylor-Brown with the story.
That really is a truly gruesome story. It's coming up later. 7.30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara on LBC. News time, Thomas Watts.
The British Medical Association has agreed to put a new government offer to resident doctors in England. They will decide in the coming days whether or not they'll call off a planned five-day strike just before Christmas. American troops have taken control of an oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela. It marks another escalation in tensions between the two countries following a series of American strikes on drug smugglers. Ministers have unveiled a strategy aimed at halving rough sleeping over the next 5 years. They've set out how they'll use £3.5 billion to help those already on the street and stop others falling into crisis. LBC weather, dry and bright for many places, becoming cloudier through the day with rain arriving in Scotland and Northern Ireland this afternoon. A high of 13 degrees.
On the latest episode of The Newsagents,
we talked to Andy Hughes about his jaw-dropping exclusive alleging a paedophile ring at the heart of the Metropolitan Police.
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at two. We said three. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
With Lloyd's Home Insurance, there's £50,000 to be won. When you cover the glassware, no one's actually allowed to use. Or the garden shed, a.k.a. your fortress of calm. Rated excellent on Trustpilot, you can be confident with your cover when you take out a new home insurance policy and be in for a chance to win £50,000. Get a quote with Lloyd's today. Buy a new home insurance policy direct from us by the 31st of December 2025. Offer T's and C's apply. Policy terms, limits and exclusions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
7.33, back to your reaction. The deal that's been put forward to the doctors, we have to say the fairly senior member of the BMA was not particularly optimistic about it, was he? A rather pessimistic second verdict, or doctor's verdict there. We'll come back to that in a moment. Now, into the world of business and finance, Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. And, of course, it's always front-page news what the Fed does and what decision did they take. I understand lowest level for 3 years. What's the background to that, Christian? Good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. Yes, the Federal Reserve, the US Central Bank, had their latest interest rate decision late last night. They announced they are cutting rates by a quarter point for the third time this year. You'll recall that Donald Trump has been furious with them for not cutting interest rates, but they have started to do so. However, there was a big split among those on the board. And one of the reasons why there's such uncertainty around the right decision was because they're almost flying blind because of the US government shutdown. The US federal government literally shut down for a huge period of time because the Republicans and Democrats could not agree on a budget, and therefore federal employees, federal agencies and institutions had to down tools for much of October and November, meaning that inflation data, employment data, labour market data was not collected. So they're sort of working on best estimates and on which they are split. Some people say the US economy is doing better than it appears. Other people saying inflation is ticking up, as is the rate of unemployment, and we have to fill in the blanks and assume it continued to climb in October, November. So there was a debate, huge debate, over the direction of monetary policy, of interest rate decisions in the US. But they did cut down from 3.5% to 3.5%, having been at 3.75%. But of course, Donald Trump is itching to have a new chair of the Federal Reserve. Jerome Powell's term comes up next year, and Donald Trump is set to announce who he wants to be his successor, somebody perhaps a little more aligned with Trump's way of thinking. He's going to announce that decision early in the new year.
Let's come back home. What's happening at Bill Hill?
Billy Hill, William Hill's owner, Evoke, is considering whether to sell itself or break up parts of its business. This is in response to the multi-billion pound raid on the gambling sector at last month's budget. So William Hill, which also owns 888 and some online casinos, etc., has told investors that it's kicking off a strategic review of its assets, which could include breaking up or spinning off some of its flagship brands or putting this company up for sale in its entirety. This is a company, by the way, which is struggling on the stock market. It's carrying a fair bit of weight, and its share price has not performed at all well since its William Hill acquisition. Share price down 95% since that takeover. But they are not alone in the gambling sector. Ladbrokes owner Entain and Flutter, which owns Paddy Power, have both warned that the tax increases on the sector are going to kill off their investment plans. They're going to have to reduce the numbers of staff. A lot of people say that, they're just moaning because they don't like changes to their tax environment. But the companies in question are saying this will have very real-world consequences. And you might see that William Hill owner, if they start to put bits of their business up for sale. And you might well see it among other parts of the sector in job creation and investment decisions as well.
Talking about ownership, shows how far behind I am on this area. I thought Leon was still owned by one of the Dimbleby family along with some partners, but apparently, when did Asda buy it? It has to be Asda. When did that happen?
Yes, again, this is one of those companies on the high street that you look at and you think you've got a sense of familiarity with it, but its ownership structure is getting more and more complex. Well, what's happened here is that John Vincent, who first launched the fast food chain, has bought it back. He bought it back off the Asda group and said that he didn't like the way they were running it, and it was losing a tremendous amount of money, and it lost its sort of moral purpose, if you like, for the kind of caliber and approach of its to its ingredients and etc. Always had a bit of a philosophy behind it, which John Vincent said that they had lost. He has bought them back, and no sooner has he done that than he's preparing to put the business into administration. Now, that's more dramatic, perhaps, than it sounds. It is a struggling chain. What he's done is he's hired administrators to oversee what's called a CVA, a company voluntary agreement, which is a legal structure that allows you to basically close certain branches and get out of certain lease and rental agreements as part of a restructuring. So he says that they're losing about 10 million quid a year at the moment. Now, this is a result of some culture changes, he said, within the company because of its ownership changes of recent years, but also because of the pressures felt by the hospitality sector more broadly. So he wants to slim down from 70 to 50 locations across the country. There will be some job losses in that. He's going to get rid of about 20 restaurants, refocus the brand on its philosophy and its sort of core identity, and fingers crossed for 2026.
And let's finish with something I know City AM is covering, which is the idea of getting financial advice as part of a shake-up. What can you tell us about that?
I think this is really, really important. So because of the rules that have been in place sort of post-financial crisis, financial institutions, that's your pension provider or savings providers, are not allowed to give customers advice, which means that the only people who can get financial advice on what's the best product or what's the best strategy will have to pay for it. And a lot of people can't afford to pay for it, so they don't get advice. I was speaking to the chief executive of one of the biggest insurance companies in the country, who says that they so often get people who ring up, they're a pension provider as well, and they say, can I take 10 grand out of my pension, please, because I want to buy a car? And the person on the other end of the phone is not allowed to say, I wouldn't do that if I were you, sir, because there'll be a tax bill, but you could think about doing this instead. They've not been allowed to say that because that's financial advice. Well, the Financial Conduct Authority is changing those rules to allow a targeted support program, as they call it, which is being described as game-changing in the city, I have to say. People will now be able to say, yeah, here are your options. And you know what? Looking at your circumstances, I think you should look at this one. And that might seem like a really simple switch, but it could have a profound implication for people who have not been able to pay financial advisors and who can now just have a sensible conversation with their pension provider or whoever it might be over the phone. So I think it's a really good move.
I do think, and we've said this before, haven't we, Christian, that we have young people leaving school and they might know the rivers of the world or how to conjugate a French verb, but they've no idea how a mortgage works, what APR means or anything like that, pensions, ISAs, and something that he sheds a bit on lighter, that will help so many. Christian, thank you. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. More details on that story, of course, on City AM Online, 7:40. Come to more of your reactions on the doctor's strike in a moment. As you have already heard on the LBC News Bulletin, while there's no pay, they will cancel fees that the government says will put quite a bit of money, fees that are only paid by resident doctors. The BMA is questioning that. They also say that they will increase the number of jobs, because one of the great frustrations is this fantastic body of mostly young men and women work so hard, train so hard, study so hard, and then can't get promotion, because in many instances health trusts block those jobs, because obviously when you need to save cash, you're not going to pay a manager's salary if you can get someone lower down the chain. The government is saying they're freeing up thousands of jobs. The BMA is saying they're just massaging the figures. In truth, I have no idea, and probably most of you don't. But, we're in this flu pandemic, epidemic. The strike is due in less than a week. Have you still got support for them? Public support? It is suggested in one newspaper that it is draining as if water down a sieve or a hole in a Thames water pipe. What's the reality as you see it? We'll take more of your calls on that in just a moment. But a story I did mention before, and this is a shocking story about a jealous ex-boyfriend been found guilty of murdering his former partner's sister and her three young children after setting alight their home. Details now from Alex Taylor-Brown, LBC's Yorkshire correspondent. Alex, good morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, as you say, shocking. The judge described this as distressing beyond measure. A mum and her three children killed in a house fire started by a man that the court heard was fueled by jealousy, drink and drugs. It claimed the lives of Bryony Gowith, 9-year-old Dennis D. Birtle, Oscar Birtle, who was 5, and 1-year-old Aubrey Birtle. This happened here on Westbury Road in the early hours of August the 21st last year. Shiraz Ali, who's 40, had recently seen his relationship with Bryony's sister Antonia end. She was staying here at the house when this happened. Video showed Ali, Callum Sunderland and Mohammed Shabir stopping at a petrol station, filling up a canister of fuel and heading here to the house. When they got here, Ali ordered Sunderland to kick the door in, which was caught on Ring doorbell, and play to the jury. Now, Ali then goes into the house pouring petrol before lighting it. Antonia had desperately tried to draw Ali out. Bryony and the children couldn't be saved by the time emergency services arrived, but Ali was pulled out alive. He was put in an induced coma and wasn't expected to survive at times. He did manage to give evidence, now in a wheelchair and disfigured from the fire. At Doncaster Crown Court, the jury took more than 6 hours to find Ali guilty of murder and the attempted murder of Antonia. Sunderland was acquitted of murder and attempted murder, but found guilty of manslaughter. Now, following the convictions, Antonia spoke of the family's loss.
But even with justice, nothing will ever make this right. Nothing will ever fill the silence where their laughter should be. Nothing will ever bring back our family. We will forever carry this brokenness, and yet we will hold on to them tightly in only ways we can now, through our memories, our photos and our precious videos. Those are all we have left now.
And the judge praised Antonia's bravery on that night. There were tears from the family as the verdicts were delivered. DCI Stacey Atkinson of West Yorkshire Police told me this investigation has been incredibly tough.
I can't think of a more distressing set of circumstances, if I'm honest. A mother and three children, you know, gone in an instant. From the very beginning, from those officers that attended and put their own lives at risk, trying in vain to save the life of four people, I can imagine that that will live with them forever. The investigation has been incredibly emotive.
Now, the driver, Shabir, actually died from a heart attack in prison before this got to trial. The family of Bryony, Dennisty, Oscar and Aubrey say their loss has brought unimaginable sadness and grief. Both Ali and Sunderland will be sentenced at a future date.
Alex Taylor-Brown reporting. Let's come back to your reactions. I'm asking you for your view of the doctors and the doctor's strike, whether you still have sympathy. And, of course, also the fact that we had a caller, an earlier caller, Nigel, who said that the doctors effectively were being lazy. Rachel was listening. That man was talking rubbish. I'm a lead nurse in a GP practice in Lambeth. We all worked bloody hard, including doctors and nurses. He needs to be told to shut up. I'm sure, Nigel, you're still listening. Liz, what is that man saying? Firstly, the GPs are not striking. It's hospital doctors who are striking. How on earth are doctors lazy when they work 12-hour shifts? The long hours are what putting patients' lives at risk, not the strikes. Same subject, though, and I'm asking again the level of public support or otherwise. Ryan in Leeds, the greed of doctors and lack of understanding of their actions at strike is unfathomable. 29% unheard of in the private sector. Pension packet unheard of. What about all the engineers, PhDs and other hard-working graduates who agree? Who struggle? I agree with your caller, Nigel. And this is a puzzling one, because when Nigel finished his conversation with me, I said he certainly had some punchy views, and this has annoyed Kev. We know you know the newspaper industry. Stop using terminology we don't understand, like punchy. That's not a word. Everybody knows. That's not a newspaper word. Everybody knows punchy. It's strong, powerful, whatever. Anyway, Kev, I'm sorry if you had an issue with that. All right, coming up after the news, as I've mentioned, this attempt to try and tackle homelessness. Peter Mackey is from the Institute of Global Homelessness, and he welcomes the initiative.
For a long time, I've been advocating for a greater focus on prevention alongside a lot of colleagues. And this strategy goes some way towards prioritising that.
Plus, the message from a growing number of publicans to Labour MPs.
Get out of my pub!
Just turned 7:46, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
The government's put a new offer to resident doctors in England aimed at averting a pre-Christmas strike. There has been another sharp escalation in tensions between the US and Venezuela, and ministers have unveiled a new strategy aimed at tackling homelessness. LBC weather, dry and bright for many today, but becoming cloudier through the day with rain arriving in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 29 at the A127 to 26 at Waltham Abbey. It's because a van's broken down. One lane is closed and it's taking nearly an hour to get through that queue. Also very busy on the M25 clockwise onto the QE2 bridge. There are delays on the A3 northbound heading up towards the Hog's Back, and that's slow from Milford. It's because of an accident. On the trains, no Gatwick Express services running at all. The entire line is suspended. The overnight works are still taking place. Southern are running to and from Victoria, but with delays of about 20 minutes. And on the underground, there are severe delays on the central line and minor on the northern.
This is LBC.
This Christmas at Tesco, get selected meat joints and boneless salmon sides better than half price with your Tesco Club card. That's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland. Beef and lamb ends 28th of the 12th. Hawk, 6th of the 1st. Gammon, 13th of the 1st. Salmon, 1st of the 1st. Club card required.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers on my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late, but it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop, plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado, life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at two. We said three. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 11 minutes before 8, and while homelessness should be front of mind all the time and the terrible plight for so many people, it becomes even more acute at this time of the year, doesn't it? Because obviously it is cold, and also if you're fortunate enough to have a family, hopefully at some point during the holidays, you'll be surrounded by your family and a feeling of great warmth, and I wish you nothing but happiness. But for what of the people who sadly have no home and in some instances have no family either? Well, the government says they've had enough and they're launching the National Plan to End Homelessness. And here with details is Labour MP and Minister of State for Local Government and Homelessness, Alison McGovern. Good to have you on, Minister. Thank you for your time. What is it you and your colleagues are putting forward this morning? Good morning.
Good morning. So we're putting forward our plan, which has at the heart of it three new goals. And the first goal is that we want to prevent homelessness more. So we count the number of people who are presenting themselves to their council as at risk of homelessness. And we want to make sure that at that point, people don't actually wind up on the streets or without a home. There's two really bad symptoms of the situation that we've got in that are urgent. And that's why we want to end the use of B&B accommodation for children. Because, you know, you said it yourself, particularly at this time of year, no child should be in a B&B. And then on rough sleeping, the statistics have changed. And what we've noticed in the data is the number of people who, you know, almost a third of rough sleepers who've now been sleeping on the streets for more than 3 months for, you know, long term. And in some cases, that's years. And so we've got a new objective to halve long term rough sleeping, not just getting people in and then them ending up on the streets again, but really offering people help and support for their sometimes complicated needs to make sure that we reduce the level of rough sleeping consistently.
So just to clarify, the 3 points are to try and prevent this issue, to try and end the use of bed and breakfast, particularly for children, and a target to half rough sleeping. Some of these poor souls have been out on the streets for months, many months. OK, so it's £3.5 billion. That's a chunky load of cash, Minister. How is it to be spent?
So that money is largely for local authorities. So the big bulk of that money is for local authorities because they have the duty to prevent homelessness. So the law says that, you know, if, as I said before, if you're at risk of homelessness, you go to your council and they should be able to offer you help and support. We give local authorities a big annual grant to do that work, and in recent weeks, we've increased that amount of money in year to try to boost that work that they're able to do. We're also introducing some new resources for local authorities and for mayors to try to help them innovate. So to give one example of that, we know from some councils, for example, Waltham Forest in London has managed to radically reduce its B&B use. But in some places, use of B&Bs for families is going up. So we're introducing a new £30 million fund for those areas that are most affected so that they can change the way that they're helping support families and not use B&Bs anymore.
Can you give us an idea of the scale of the problem here? One newspaper, the Daily Mirror has done an in-depth investigation. How many people do we believe are homeless this Christmas?
So every year about 300,000 people go to their council and say they're at risk of homelessness. Some of that can be prevented, but not enough, hence the new goal. We do an annual snapshot count of the number of people who are rough sleeping, and at the last count, it was about 4,667 people. Those numbers of people rough sleeping go up and down month on month, but we take an annual count, which is the official measure. I'm sorry to say, Nick, there's 174,000 children in temporary accommodation right now.
Yes.
That is way too many.
Do you need water or anything?
No, I'm okay. I'm all right, thank you.
Go ahead, Minister, go ahead. Yep, sorry.
Thank you. And, you know, the figure that I am most bothered about as I'm sat here talking to you is the 2,000 children who are in B&B accommodation and have been for more than 6 weeks this Christmas. That is already unlawful and has been for 20 years. And if we do nothing else, we have to reduce that number.
Well, you're spot on with the numbers, because the Daily Mirror, as I say, has done a dossier and you've hit every figure. But there is a contributing factor to this, of course, which is the amount of people who have arrivals in this country who have to be housed, asylum seekers and others. Do you have a figure for that? How many of those are in hotels or HMOs?
I don't have the figure off the top of my head for that.
All right. Well, I do. And if you put the figures together, it's 50,000. But the pressure that puts on the system that you and your colleagues are trying to put right is immense. So what are we doing about that?
So that is too many, and you'll know that the government is reducing the backlog. The backlog of asylum decisions is coming down. I've been working with my colleague Alex Norris, who's the Minister for Asylum, to try and work out how, once somebody's got a decision about that they are, you know, refugee and that they need to be able to rebuild their life, that we get them out of asylum accommodation as quickly as possible and housed and employed and paying taxes and able to contribute. That is the work that we need to do. There's another aspect to it, which is unfortunately one of the problems of homelessness and temporary accommodation is bits of the government not talking to each other and passing information on. So as part of this strategy, we're making sure that councils know when refugees are leaving accommodation so that they can help support them as they would do anybody else.
When you speak with your colleague Alex Norris, do you talk about the success of the in-out scheme? Are you aware of the numbers there? This was meant to be the game changer back in August, Minister.
Yes, we talk about all areas of policy, and on this scheme, the importance of that, you'll know that it was introduced as a pilot, as a demonstrator. The fact...
Do you have the numbers to hand?
I don't have those.
Right, I'll tell you. 153 have gone out, 141 have come in, and the total number of arrivals is 36,603.
Yeah, but the point
so
is...
how can this be deemed a success, Minister?
But the point is, because the point is to make it clear that the law will be stuck to. You'll know, Nick, that there are many other things that we need to do to stop people risking life and limb in the Channel and to deal with these horrendous criminals that traffic people across borders. There's many other things that we need to do, and the in-out scheme is just one part of it.
Do you still have faith in that, Minister?
Yes, I have faith in my colleagues that they will be able to...
Despite it's been running for 5 months, 153 out, 141 in. I'm staggered.
The point is
you knew all your other figures so well, and you're still clutching to
this,
Minister.
Do you know what, Nick? You often challenge me on the numbers, and I welcome that, because it's your job to make sure that we as ministers are on top of our brief. So if, you know, politics is not a memory test, it's about making sure that you've got good answers and that they're effective. And that's what both our homelessness strategy is about and also the steps that Alex is taking to make sure that our borders are secure.
Last minute or so together, can I take you back to your party leader and the Prime Minister while in opposition in 2022?
Labour will rebuild trust by reforming the centre of government and replacing the unelected House of Lords with a new, smaller, democratically elected second chamber.
Why should my listeners believe a thing he says is announced that, in fact, there are more lords and ladies being created?
Because we've been the party taking steps to deal with the House of Lords, getting rid of the hereditary...
You just put more in, Minister.
Well, so, because we've had 14 years of Tory government, appointed lots of
No, I'm not going to... I'm sorry, that's going to VAR. That one is not... You cannot blame the...
I would love to have VAR for political interviews, let me tell you.
They cannot blame Sir Keir's decision to put more... You cannot blame that on 14 years of Conservative rule.
Well, we can
Your party said it would be scrapped. He's putting more in.
My point is that we can blame the unbalanced nature of the House of Lords on 14 years of Tory rule.
You
and
going
the rate at which they put people in. What we are doing is getting rid of the hereditaries because it is not right in this day and age, in 2025, that anyone inherit their right to legislate. The next step is to limit the number by introducing an age limit. Unfortunately, it is true to say that the House of Lords has got in the way of some of the flagship policies of the Labour government.
Right.
So we do need to make sure that we appoint good people from all walks of life.
Lastly, as a growing number of publicans are saying they're closing their door to Labour MPs and are putting stickers on the door, no Labour MPs, because of measures taken in last month's budget, which they claim treat them unfairly as regards prices and business rates. Have you ever been barred entry to a pub so far, or recently, Minister?
I have never been barred. And
not recently. You could go to Birkenhead and you'll be welcome at the Birkenhead Arms or whatever it is.
I think it's at the Future Yard Music Bar two doors down from my office. But I think I think it's a bit early in the morning for a discussion of my drinking career.
All right, but you can get into that local pub. Many can't. Grateful for your time. Thank you. Good luck with those ambitions to try and end homelessness as outlined by Minister of State for Local Government and Homelessness, Alison McGovern, who's taken us to the 8 o'clock news on LBC, Thomas Watts.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, resident doctors are to take part in an online ballot to decide whether to go ahead with a pre-Christmas strike. The government has put forward a new offer to the British Medical Association, including a major expansion of training places. Medics are due to take part in a five-day walkout in England from next Wednesday. Dr. Arjan Singh from the BMA has told Nick it is a significant offer, but leaves some issues unresolved.
90% of our membership were... balloted on pay, and there's obviously no significant movement at all on pay. And in terms of jobs, whilst the solution that they've described to us in the room, you know, would go a significant way, that's not being relayed to members by the government. So I don't understand how our members are meant to analyse this information.
The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has warned the peak of the flu season is yet to come. Cases are at their highest level on record for this time of year, with the latest figures due out later. Ministers have announced a target to halve long-term rough sleeping by the next general election. The £3.5 billion strategy also includes a push to reduce the time families spend living in B&Bs, but some charities have warned the plan falls short. The Homelessness Minister, Alison McGovern's, told Nick that most of the money will go to local councils.
The figure that I am most bothered about as I'm sat here talking to you is the 2,000 children who are in B&B accommodation and have been for more than 6 weeks this Christmas. That is already unlawful and has been for 20 years. And if we do nothing else, we have to reduce that number.
Venezuela has accused the US of piracy after American troops stormed and seized an oil tanker. Officials in Washington say the ship was transporting sanctioned oil from Venezuela and Iran. It marks another escalation in tensions between the US and Iran after a series of American strikes on drug traffickers. Fans will be able to enter the ballot for World Cup tickets from this afternoon. Supporters groups say they are facing record high prices to follow England and Scotland in North America next year. Tourists heading to the US could be asked to provide a five-year social media history as part of the new visa rules. And the winners of the first ever Global Player Awards have been announced. The news agents won Best Podcast Show. Christiane Amanpour presents The X-Files with Jamie Rubin, picked up the biggest new podcast. You can see the full list of winners on Global Player. In the city, the FTSE 100 is reopening at 96.55. It closed up 13 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, most places dry and bright this morning, then becoming cloudier through the day with rain in Scotland and Northern Ireland later. A high of 13 Celsius. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Get hosting sorted with Black Friday deals on the UK's best broadband technology.
Yeah, but can it handle the whole family online all day long?
Sure can. EE's full fibres, ready for it all. It's ultra-fast and ultra-reliable.
And what about my current contract?
Rip it up. We'll give you up to £300 towards your early exit fees.
Amazing.
So switch to EE today. Offer ends 11th December.
Up to £300 credited to your EE account. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims. New customers, 62% availability, 24 months terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after 8, Thursday, December the 11th. It's akin to child abuse, the claim by campaigners that children are being used as human guinea pigs, children who in some instances are possibly troubled, and certainly should not be treated in this fashion in shaky foundations, as the Cass review found. We'll give you more details on that. In other news and other possible changes, childhood criminal records for thousands could be wiped out under plans being considered by Justice Secretary David Lammy. Speaking with LBC last night, consultant forensic psychiatrist Duncan Harding said,
as adults, our narrative is built on a foundation of our childhood, and I think we build our own stories, and I think what we need in society is social consequences.
Back to that story I was discussing with the Labour minister there, the idea that increasing number of Labour MPs are being banned from pubs and bars up and down the land. James Fowler runs the Larder House in Bournemouth.
So it just seems like they're taxing the licence industry. Now we need to cause a stir because it's just not fair.
I think it's a small sacrifice on them, but we want this message to go back to central government.
Plus the death, aged just 55, a trailblazing author, Sophie Kinsella. Here's a clip from the trailer of Confessions of a Shopaholic, starring Isla Fisher as Rebecca Longwood.
You know that thing when you see someone cute and he smiles and your heart kind of goes like warm butter sliding down hot toast? Well, that's what it's like when I see a store.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Question. Who would give 10-year-old children powerful drugs that can arrest their physical development and are known previously to be harmful in a service or situation that was called shaky foundations in a seminal review of gender identity services? Well, unbelievably, that would be the NHS, because campaigners now beginning legal action to halt a trial of puberty-blocking drugs on 226 children, the youngest of whom will be 10. The NHS, and this is an expensive trial or experiment, it's going to be some £10.7 million. It's known as Pathways. The 226 children, all under 16, will have been diagnosed with gender incongruence, prescribed puberty blockers for 2 years. Speaking in the House of Commons last December, Health Secretary Wes Streeting announced an indefinite ban on puberty blockers.
The Cass review made clear that there is not enough evidence about the long-term effects of using puberty blockers to treat gender incongruence to know whether they are safe or beneficial. That evidence should have been established before they were ever prescribed for this purpose. It is a scandal that medicine was given to vulnerable young children without the proof that it is safe or effective or through the rigorous safeguards of a clinical trial.
Now, even those with a sketchy knowledge of this field will recall the impact of the so-called Tavistock Clinic. Susan Evans was a psychoanalytic psychotherapist who worked at the Tavistock and joins me now. If I might ask you first, just remind the listeners of why the Tavistock is so significant in this conversation. Good morning to you.
Morning, Nick. Yes, of course. So the Tavistock GID at that time, the Gender Identity Development Service, was the only service in the country. It took national referrals for children of all ages up to 18. And they started a study commenced giving puberty blockers to teenage children. And that was when I was there in 2003. They were doing it, but the study started a few years later. And then they continued to do the study. Then they lowered the age group, as you said, to 10-year-old children, and continued to provide puberty blockers to the children without ever reviewing the study that they were doing. And it went on for years and years. And that was why I took what became known as the Keira Bell versus Tavistock judicial review, because I felt it had to be stopped.
And more on Kira, because as a 15-year-old, she was diagnosed with gender dysphoria, and we'll come back to that in just a moment, if we may. Then, of course, Dr. Hilary Cass had the Cass review. What were the findings specifically in this field that you recall from that, Susan?
Well, largely the results from that were that there was no evidence. There were all sorts of claims of evidence by various charities and organisations, but actually when they evaluated it properly, there was very little evidence to suggest that this form of medication for children was effective at all on their mental state.
You mentioned the Kira Bell case. This dates back to when she was 15. Remind the listeners of that.
Yes, so there was all sorts of, cut it short, really what happened was there were parents raising concerns about the Tavistock and the way they were rushing children through, children with comorbidities, autism, many of them were homosexual, and they also started to have clinicians who whistleblew at the time. I whistleblew back in 2005, but what happened was that although people started to pay attention and journalists were asking questions, the Tavistock would always then answer with, we're a world-class service, you know, we've got, or words to that effect, mm-hmm. and we know what we're doing. And so I felt that the only way we could put a stop, or to at least to examine what they were doing, was to take a judicial review. And that is exactly what happened in the two-day trial that became known as Bell v. Tavistock.
So let's move to today. Your reaction to what we're hearing about the so-called Pathways programme and 226 children?
Yes, I mean, I've written a six-page letter, open letter, people can find it, to Wes Streeting, along with my husband, Marcus Evans.
Where can they find it? Susan, sorry.
It's on Twitter. Okay. It's been published on various gen spec sites, Transgender Trend, that
can
kind
you
of
sum
thing.
Up those six pages in a couple of paragraphs?
Well, basically, when Cass did the review, one of the things they were meant to do was follow up and do a linkage study for the children who had already been treated and potentially damaged by this medication and cross-sex hormones. That was prevented by the adult clinics at the time. Most of them refused to give Cass the information. And then, unfortunately, that seems to have sort of drifted away. And what I'm saying, essentially, is that the children who have already gone through this program should be properly followed up to see what the effects on their bodies and their minds have been before we go ahead and potentially damage and interfere with another generation of children. And also, Nick, I just don't believe that interfering with healthy children's bodies, because their mind is distressed, I don't think it's the right approach. I think it's short-termism.
How can a 10-year-old give consent?
No, they can't.
How will they know? I mean, it's been a long time since I was 10, but I've raised two children, and I remember when they were 10. Issues such as this, I don't think they'd have had enough information to give consent.
No, well, that's the irony of it. And actually, Nick, even the parents, the children are asked to give assent to this programme, but the parents are being asked to give consent. And I think it's very unfair on the parents as well, because how can you consent to potentially delivering something to your child that has no evidence and that could harm their healthy body? There's pretty strong evidence to suggest there will be harm. It's not a reversible treatment.
Well, indeed it's not, and certainly in the case of Kira Bell, as you mentioned. Susan Evans, you're a psychoanalytic psychotherapist. You worked at the Tavistock for nearly a decade. Kira, just to remind you, she was 15. She was diagnosed with gender dysphoria. A year later, she was on those puberty blockers. The next year, she was injected with testosterone. 2 years after that, she had both of her breasts surgically removed. She then realised she was not a boy, as she'd been told at the Tavistock. She was a woman who happened to be a lesbian. Let's speak with Joe. Now, you have experience with the Tavistock. Can you tell the listeners what that is, Jo? Good morning.
Oh, hi, yes. So my son actually came out as trans 10 years ago. So actually, in terms of being a family and being an adult now who has had that long-term experience, we're here to say how life-changing in a positive way that has been. So for my son, absolutely, it was life-changing to go through that.
A lot of criticism was levelled at the Tavistock. Yep. How unfair is that, would you say?
Well, what I think happened is I think they became overwhelmed. So we were lucky enough to have been under their care whilst their caseloads were manageable. And I'm not denying some of the criticisms about record keeping and things that happened there, but we actually had an excellent service from them. So we had the best part of a year of counselling. We weren't rushed into anything. Nobody was told that they were a different gender. That was explored with, we had the same two clinicians for 3.5 years, and we were not rushed into anything. So, and I, you know, I'm very mindful that I'm not a clinician, I'm a parent, but that, you know, hormone blockers are still given to children who have early puberty, and actually, and then they're stopped and puberty starts at an appropriate time. So, you know, that's what they were designed for and that's what they do.
As the experience you have of having a son, as a mother with a son, do you agree that a 10-year-old should be given this sort of drugs?
You know, that's not my place to say that, but I think that if you're, as a parent myself, and I know lots of other parents, when you are struggling with your child who's experiencing dysphoria, you know, and sometimes quite extreme dysphoria, you are open to what can I do for my child that will alleviate this.
But would you have given assent to your son at age 10?
I mean, he was 15 when we first went under the Tavistock. So had he
15,
came out at 10...
You start to... I mean, again, it's a long time since I was... But at 15, you are starting to sort of know where, to put it politely, where your urges might be. At 10, I would suggest you're not, Jo.
Well, I think, you know, again, if you talk to some parents who've got very young trans kids, they've been saying that for years and years and years, and they're trying to help and support those children. If you were to do that, you would want to do that and monitor it and look at the impact that that is having on your child. And that's exactly what we had. We had excellent care. We were under UCLH, University College Hospital London, and, you know, we had, I felt a huge amount of information about the implications. There is a lot of international research to say that there isn't, you know, and I felt for the parents when this all was paused. I really, my heart went out to the parents that were having that care and support either withdrawn or stopped, you know, the prospects of having access to that. Yes, we probably do need more research, but you know, I think the way that trans kids have been treated and their families have just been overlooked and pushed to one side. And
I will leave it there. Jo, thank you. You're talking about your son who was treated some years ago at the Tavistock in a very positive fashion. And now over to you. Would you give your consent to your 10-year-old child beginning drugs so powerful as puberty? 10? Are you going to tell me a 10-year-old boy or girl actually knows all their sexual urges and drives and wants and desires? Or is this, as one conservative, prominent conservative MP, Claire Coutinho, who's the Shadow Minister for Women, says, this is a state-sanctioned chemical castration of children. Which is it? And staying with politicians, I've mentioned a Conservative. Labour politicians aren't very welcome in a growing number of pubs and bars.
Get out of my pub!
And I'll explain why after this. Just turned 8:16, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
The Doctors' Union is consulting its members over the government's new offer aimed at averting a pre-Christmas strike. American troops have taken control of an oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela. And the government's unveiled a long-awaited strategy aimed at halving rough sleeping. LBC weather, dry and bright for many places, but becoming cloudier through the day. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25, anti-clockwise from junction 28 at the A12 to 27 at the M11. It's because a van broke down earlier. It has now been recovered, but it's still very slow. The M23, very busy southbound. Just after the M25 junction, a van has broken down, so that's causing lengthy queues. And also very slow on the M4 going eastbound onto the elevated section. There are delays of about half an hour. On the train, still no Gatwick Express. The entire line is suspended. It's because the overnight works are still taking place. Southern, as a result, are delayed by about 20 minutes to and from Victoria. And on the underground, there are severe delays on the Northern and Central lines.
This is LBC.
At Lidl, get the best value this Christmas when you're carving up a storm. We won't be beaten on price with our Birchwood fresh British whole turkeys in store from the 19th of December. Now that's what we call a showstopper. Lidl, more to value. Selected products price match in most major UK supermarkets until 24th of the 12th. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. While stocks last, exclusions apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Have you noticed the way fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because conveying your message with sound is the most effective way to communicate to the players on the pitch that they're rubbish. And this works in advertising too. You see, research shows how brands that use radio to amplify their advertising are 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's a powerful piece of journalism in today's Daily Mail. Claire Coutinho saying that this is nothing less than the state-sanctioned chemical castration of children. And I'm asking you, coming up 20 after 8, 226 children, some of whom are aged 10, will be given very powerful puberty blockers. I'm not going to say it's wrong, because I'm in no way an expert in this field, but I can say that I have concerns. Stella's in Richmond. Stella, would you do it as a mum? Good morning.
Good morning. Absolutely not. And I echo what your thoughts are on this. It feels like they are guinea pigs being fed to the lions for what feels like a political movement. You know, I feel very uncomfortable that these young children who have not yet developed or formed... No. I'm a lesbian myself.
Oh, right, okay.
And, you know, there were times in my childhood where I wanted to dress up as a boy, I wanted to play football, I wanted to put on leather jackets and, you know, if I was to go to these clinics, they would have probably told me that I was born in the wrong body and that I was a boy.
Well, that's exactly what happened to Keira Bell, because at 15, and she even had her breasts removed, and now she realised she's a lesbian woman.
Yes, it's absolutely shocking. And I think if we just allow children to be children, let them explore, let them get rough in the mud, let them develop and then find themselves in their, you know, late teens. What I also find, we wouldn't take a kid to a tattoo shop and be like, this kid wants a tattoo.
Oh, it's illegal. Very good point.
So, you know, we're going to go take a kid to a tattoo shop because it wants a tattoo and it's made the decision. You know, it feels incredibly unsafe, especially when it's so permanent.
Do you mind asking, just a couple of questions, if I'm prying too much, just tell me and I'll back off. Do you know what sort of age you decided that you were a lesbian woman?
I realised quite late, because there wasn't many lesbians in my community. I'm from a very small town.
Right.
So for me, I didn't realise what a lesbian was until I was probably about 15, 16, 17.
What, you genuinely didn't know that a woman could love another woman?
I genuinely did not. I never saw it in my community, right? So,
right. Okay.
And I remember that I was really tomboyish and I liked playing with the boys and I used to play wrestling with all the boys. I'm just concerned because I know that little me would have gone to these clinics and they would have been like, well, she's obviously a boy. It's frightening. It's absolutely frightening that they are chemically castrating children and cutting the breast off. It's mutilation.
And lastly, when you realised that you were lesbian, was there a sense of relief? Did people welcome you? I trust your family was supportive. What happened, Stella?
I think it was a mixed bag, and I think there's always going to be people that have expectations of you to be a certain way. But this is where it kind of comes into this transgender movement, where they're expecting you to want to be trans and they want to change your gender. If being in your body isn't good enough for you, then we need to try and find a way to make you feel comfortable and beautiful in yourself, not chemically castrate you.
Enjoyed our conversation. Look after yourself, Stella. Thank you for sharing so much. Now, there's already, as I told you, the legal challenges have started. A protest is planned on December the 17th outside the Department of Health. And today, the first legal challenge has been announced. That's led by the Bayswater Group of Concerned Parents. We have spoken with them in the past. And also Keira Bell, I've mentioned her background as well, a woman who detransitioned after she was prescribed puberty blockers back at that Tavistock clinic aged 15. They've sent a formal, what's called a letter before claim, to the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency and the Health Research Authority, the watchdogs that have approved the trial, saying they must scrap it. It's fair to say, obviously, campaigners are supporting them, but there is quite a group of cross-party MPs that have warned West Streeting this is a, quote, dangerous mistake that could, quote, devastate the lives of those taking part. Out of quotes, simple point. Children aged 10? It is almost. Is it offensive to call them guinea pigs? Sheila in Hornsey. Sheila, your view. Good morning.
Hello there.
Your view on this?
I think the world has gone mad.
Right.
My 10-year-old grandson, imagine to put him through. He doesn't know. I mean, he's clever, but he knows nothing about sex or any gender, nothing.
How would you react if you heard that he or one of his mates at class was going to be given these very powerful puberty blockers, Sheila?
I would have them arrested and put in jail and the king thrown away. These people are crazy. The world has gone mad, Nick.
Many people say that on many occasions, and this is just another example. Best wishes to your grandson. Thank you for that. This is what you're saying on social media. Joe in Wimbledon, this puberty blockers experiment is horrific. It can cause untold harm. I cannot understand why it's going ahead. The effects are supposed to be easily reversible, but tests have shown that is not true. Well, sadly, not in Keira Bell's case, because after taking the drugs, of course, she moved to surgery, and she had her breasts removed. Kathy says, I had three older brothers. I was a tomboy and probably still am. I would have given anything to be a boy when I was little, then puberty, and I started noticing boys in a different way, and I loved being a girl. Let children be children. Well, I would say, Kathy, and I sense you would agree with... I'm sorry, Catherine, my apologies. I sense you would agree with me. A 10-year-old is still a child. Let's move to other matters. And matters of politics. Dozens of hospitality venues, pubs, bars are protesting against levy increases with posters and stickers telling Labour MPs they are effectively barred from coming in. They're now facing banning from dozens of pubs as part of a brewing, do you get that, backlash against the business rates. And one person who's done this is Andy Lennox. Now, Andy is landlord at the Old Thatch Pub in Dorset. He's championing the No Labour MP stickers campaign. Indeed, he was first to the plate. First pub to participate, and Andy joins me now. Where'd you get the idea? Morning.
Hey, how you doing? You all right?
I'm all right, mate, because I'm not a publican. Where'd you get the idea?
Well, to be honest with you, we got to the stage where we've done so many different letters and so many different interviews, we had to do something else. And we said, well, why don't we just bar them? We know that we need to do some kind of industrial action. And essentially it was, we can't close because we can't afford to. We can't do a day of strike because we can't afford to. We can't go to London because we can't afford to. So we thought, well, if we ban 450 people, will that get the message across? And it's gone pretty mental.
Good. No Labour MPs tried to come to your pub as yet then. Now, what can you tell us? There's a heck of a row going on over this idea of exactly how the industry has been misled over the tax burden and business rates. Can you break it down into English for my listeners?
Yeah, in very, very simple terms, the tax burden has increased in the last two budgets. The last budget essentially Labour said that basically they are giving a discount and relief to the industry. The industry have proved yesterday that that is absolutely untrue, and actually the burden is another 165 million, I think it is. And ultimately, in very, very, very simple text, I was trying to explain this to my mother yesterday.
think of me as your mother. Explain it to me as your mum. Now, come on, son, darling, what are you doing here? Why are you so cross?
Essentially, basically, if you imagine that you pay 50% of a pound, and then in the last budget, they're going to say, well, we're going to pay 40% in a pound, but we're going to put up your pound to a £1.20 before we give you the discount. Essentially, is the best way I can describe it. They basically put the rates up, so my pub went up by 126%. So it went from about 35,000 up to about 89,000. They then applied the relief on top of that. But because they put the rates up by such a big amount, by 2028, I will be paying 126% more. And the problem is, we've talked to them, we've gone through all of the various different motions. I've even hand-delivered letters to Rachel Reeves. One of my partners, James, who did the first one in the restaurant, actually went to number 11. We've said what we needed. A VAT cut is the absolute need. We have to basically figure out a way of being in line with Europe. Europe, on the average, across the European Union and Ireland, is 13%. We are 20%. So we need that VAT cut. That's an absolute, and essentially we are now in industrial action rather than being nice and sending letters and having meetings.
And you're aware, of course, the Chancellor appearing in front of a panel of MPs yesterday, it was found out she'd got her figures wrong anyway about your industry and the discounts that have been afforded to you.
Well, not only did she get it wrong, but she gets it wrong every time. And this is the thing, that their numbers don't add up. And it's very, very simple. We contribute 60 billion in taxes to UK PLC. If we aren't here, that 60 billion won't be coming in taxes. What we're asking for is a VAT rate cut, which will cost 3 billion of that 60 billion. It's not a lot to ask to get us going again. And ultimately, at the end of the day, every celebration, anything that you do, you requires hospitality. You know, whatever you do, if you want to go out and celebrate, or if you want to commiserate, if you want to go and have a funeral, or you have a wedding, if you want to go and do anything, it all comes around hospitality. We are the engine and the barometer of the nation. And ultimately, we can't be ignored as much as we are. You know, we are the third biggest employer in England, and we basically get ignored as if we're just you know a group of guys that go down the pub.
You employ so many people, and there is a figure that a pub is closing roughly at the rate of one a day currently.
Well, essentially one a day for pubs and restaurants, and also the new budget has put 1 out of 10 in profitability, and that is that's worrying. I mean, my pub is, you know, it's Dorset's best pub officially. It's a really, really, really good pub.
Where are you? Whereabouts in Dorset are you?
Just outside Wimborne in Dorset.
Right, okay.
And it's great, don't get me wrong. And it's a really, really good turnover pub. It's busy, you know, it's well run. It doesn't make any money.
You know, so you're running flat out to standstill?
I think, yeah, I mean, I think the numbers were, I think we took 1.5 million and we made 50 grand. It's because of what we do. And, you know, there's got to be something wrong with our taxation system when, the government makes more money than the
point. Last question. You sound a very entrepreneurial bloke. If you were banking a bit more than 50,000 out of 1.5 turnover, I can't even do this. I bet you're the sort of guy who'd look to open another pub and employ more people, and then another bar and a restaurant or whatever else.
Well, I do. I have. I've got four pubs. I've got four restaurants. And the only way to seemingly be able to make money is to have more of the pie.
Andy, I must leave it there. Good luck with your pub and your pubs. Andy Lennox, landlord at the Old Thatch Pub outside of Wimborne in Dorset. He's championing the No Labour MPs stickers campaign. And here's a thought that's come to me. Imagine, and it is, as Andy rightly says, it's Christmas, so there's a certain amount of socialising going on. And you walk into a pub or a bar, and you suddenly find yourself standing next to Sir Keir Starmer or Rachel Reeves. And they've just got nobody with them, and they're standing there, and they're having half a lager or a glass of white wine or a dry sherry. And you're next to them in a pub. What would you say, and obviously, I can't read it out if it's foul, what would you say if you stood next to Sakir or Rachel Reeves in a pub this afternoon or tonight, what would you say to them? Give me a call on that. It's 8:32, Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC News Time. Thomas Watts.
Members of the British Medical Association are considering a fresh offer aimed at averting a pre-Christmas strike. They could decide to call off the five-day walkout by resident doctors in England, set to begin next Wednesday. Ministers have unveiled a new strategy aimed at tackling homelessness. They want to halve the number of long-term rough sleepers over the next 5 years and reduce reliance on B&Bs. There's been another sharp escalation in tensions between the US and Venezuela. It's after American troops stormed and seized an oil tanker off the coast of the South American country. LBC weather, dry and bright for many places, becoming cloudier through the day with rain arriving in Northern Ireland and Western Scotland, a high of 13 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
She's notorious for her willingness to prescribe harmful gender treatment to children, even supporting giving puberty blockers to children aged just 9 and younger. The founder of the transgender clinic Gender GP, Helen Webberly, is here to take your calls. It could get spicy.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Take the world's best snooker players. One of the most unpredictable seasons. Add the electric atmosphere of Alexandra Palace. It can only be the 2026 Johnston's Paint Masters. Could it be Sean Murphy, Judd Trump, Neil Robertson, or world champion Zhao Zingtong who takes the trophy? One thing's certain. Nothing beats the Johnston's Paint Masters live. Enjoy our biggest ever fan zone. Watch in style from VIP sofas. Book now. WST.TV/tickets.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard your flight to Geneva. This is your captain speaking, and I would like to take a second to welcome our very special guests. All the skis and snowboards that enjoy a free flight to Winter Wonderland.
The best skiing experiences start with the right airline. Book your winter holiday now on Swiss.com and enjoy free gear transport.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions, to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house, and people who don't stack the dishwasher properly. To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
8:35. You're giving me what you'd like to say. But the idea now that Labour MPs, increasing number of pubs and bars, are banning them. There's stickers on the door, no Labour MPs. I'm asking, what would you say if you bumped into Rachel Reeves and Sir Keir Starmer? Well, it was an idea, Nick. But so far, the ones that are coming in, I can't really repeat. If there's one that wants to get into a proper conversation, we'll have a go at that. But we are speaking about this idea, the action that will be taken, the puberty blockers, this trial, so-called Pathways trial, shade under £11 million, 226 children, some of whom are as young as 10, will be given these very powerful puberty blockers, of course opposed by campaigners, including, and it is worth telling the story of Kira Bell again, a woman who detransitioned. As a 15, she was diagnosed with gender dysphoria. A year after that, she was given puberty blockers. The next year, she was being injected with hefty doses of testosterone. 2 years after that, she had both her breasts surgically removed. She then realised that she wasn't, as she had no desire to be a boy, she was just a lesbian woman. She's now campaigning against trials such as these. Martin's in Birmingham. What would you say to this, Martin? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Sorry, first time caller, a little bit nervous.
Oh, look, don't be. It's good to have you on. Thank you so much.
Journey is a little bit similar to Kira's journey. I have a 15-year-old trans son who came out at the end of primary school.
Right.
We supported him through this. We opted not to go for puberty blockers, and that was with his opinion when we talked about...
And what age was he at this time? Sorry, just say again.
End of primary school, so...
Gosh, 11. Right.
Yes. But going through primary school, always played with the boys, always wanted to do all these things that the boys wanted to do, didn't identify with the, let's say, the girls, the girly girls in the playground. So we've now got to a state where his mental health is so poor because he is so unhappy with his body that we are making a decision as a family whether to take him abroad to have his breasts removed next year when he's 16. If we hadn't have made this decision, I do not believe he would still be alive. His mental health.
What has convinced, and I have no doubt you're doing everything in the best interests of your child, I want to get that out there straight away, but what is it that's convinced you that, I want to get this right, that your son is unhappy as a woman, that you would have the breasts removed? How can you be certain it's not just, as many people would say, well, this is before they reach puberty, Martin, is what many would say.
He's very much reached puberty. Fortunately or unfortunately, like his mum, he's pretty well endowed up top. And that unbelievably adds to his dysphoria, his unhappiness with his body. He's tried to remove his breasts with scissors before. An unbelievable amount of self-harm against his body.
That's awful. I'm so sorry for you. What sort of support has the NHS provided?
So Harry sees the local mental health services for children. They will not engage with him with regards to trans matters because they believe it is part of the responsibility of the Tavistock. And so we've been on the waiting list for the Tavistock for probably over 3 years now with no communication with them whatsoever other than to say, yes, we are on
there. The Tavistock, yes. Sorry to talk over you, sir, the Tavistock's no longer running. You're aware of that?
Well, okay, so, sorry, the replacement for Tavistock.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
okay.
So, sorry, that's kind of what it's referred to, because everybody seems to know what they're talking about.
Right, okay.
So he has had many, many different interventions, different medications for his mental health, and none of it has been effective or none of it has changed his pathway in that respect, which is why we are now starting to look for significantly more desperate options to see our way through this.
Where would you go? What country would offer this surgery to a 16-year-old?
So we have found someone in Spain who will offer it to a child.
But
we would put this in the same box as some countries would offer children or 16-year-olds, sorry, breast implants,
right.
or other cosmetic surgery.
Right.
Yes, removing his breasts is a very, very drastic matter. But it doesn't necessarily.
And you're not nervous about cases such as Kira Bell? I can remind you.
Yes, we are absolutely terrified about it, about whether we are making the right decision or the wrong decision. But without making a decision, will we still have a child alive at the end of this?
Oh, good God! How supportive is the school, Martin?
His school, like many other professionals that seem to interact with us, are very much on the fence. They won't be drawn either way, other than acknowledging we have a desperately unhappy child.
I was coming to the end of my conversation with you last. What makes him happy? When is the lad happy?
He rides horses and he plays rugby on a girls' rugby team, and that makes him very happy when he can.
He won't be able to play girls rugby if you go ahead with surgery, though, of course.
No, of course not. No. And he accepts that, and that's a very tough decision that he's had to come to terms with as well.
Siblings? Does he have siblings?
Yes, he has a brother.
And he's a younger brother. Is he supportive, or is it a bit too? I don't know how old he is. Is he under?
So he's a couple of years. He's a couple of years younger. He hasn't really been talked either way. Unfortunately, he's been front and centre to many suicide attempts and self-harm attempts.
Poor man.
He has to witness the most horrendous things in our household, unfortunately.
Mate, speaking as a father to another, I wish you nothing but the best of support. My heart goes out to you. I have no idea how I would handle that. And it's not for me or any of my callers to tell you otherwise. Would you please stay in touch? And thank you so much for your candour, and wish the whole family, if you celebrate it, a happy Christmas in extraordinarily trying circumstances. Please let us know how you get on with your lad. That's a call you won't forget, isn't it? Let's go to other matters. Here's something the Prime Minister probably wishes he could forget saying in 2022.
Labour will rebuild trust by reforming the centre of government, cleaning up sleaze, nourishing the relationship between central government and the devolved authorities, and replacing the unelected House of Lords with a new, smaller, democratically elected second chamber.
Utter drivel. Labour created 25 peers yesterday, including a former campaigner and someone who once, says here, brushed the tinsel off his jacket at a speech. What the hell was that? Oh, the glitter, I suppose. I remember that, when the glitter. This, of course, is something I put in the previous hour of the show. The minister was on the round. This is Homelessness Minister Alison McGovern. Why should we believe a word we hear from Labour?
Because we've been the party taking steps to deal with the House of Lords, getting rid of the hereditary.
You just put more in, which, Minister.
Well, so, the because we've had 14 years of Tory government, appointed lots of peers.
No, I'm not going to... I'm sorry, that's going to VAR. That one is not... You cannot blame the...
I would love to have VAR for political interviews, let me tell you.
They cannot blame Sir Keir's decision to put more... You cannot blame that on 14 years of Conservative rule.
Well, we can
Your party
it
said it would be scrapped. He's putting more in.
My point is that we can blame the unbalanced nature of the House of Lords on 14 years of Tory rule. And the rate at which they put people in. What we are doing is getting rid of the hereditaries, because it is not right in this day and age, in 2025, that anyone inherit their right to legislate. The next step is to limit the number by introducing an age limit. Unfortunately, it is true to say that the House of Lords has got in the way of some of the flagship policies of the Labour government.
Right.
So we do need to make sure that we appoint good people from all walks of life.
Natalie Bennett is a Green Party peer, former leader of the Green Party, and joins me now. How democratic does this strike you to be, Natalie? Good morning.
Good morning, and extraordinarily undemocratic, and just hearing that Labour minister trying to defend the indefensible this morning, taking steps. I think this is kind of like a baby crawling for the first time, kind of stumbling along. And should the government want to take a big stride forward, well, the first thing I did after I gave my maiden speech was tabled the House of Lords Elections and Other Reforms Bill, which would have created a fully elected House of Lords. They could just pick that up and adapt that accordingly, and there you go.
What will the view from within be of the events of yesterday, from within the House of Lords, do you imagine, Natalie?
I think it's, the reality is, within the House of Lords, most people there are comfortable and want to continue where they are, unsurprisingly. This has been expected, and this is a balancing up, so most people will take it in their stride. I think one of the things the outsiders will find a little surprising is the fact that three of the hereditaries are coming back and being reappointed. Now, nothing against any of those three individuals. They are all people who do indeed truly contribute. But it does feel like it's a very strange thing to be doing, to be abolishing the hereditaries, then immediately bringing some of them back.
Lastly, to the charge that this is necessary to effectively rebalance because the Conservatives, and I'll quote, stuffed the House, creating a serious imbalance, and that's allowed them to frustrate our plans, close quotes. How would you respond?
Well, there is, of course, a serious imbalance, and that's not untrue, but I would point out that we have two Greens in the House of Lords. I mean, I was the second one appointed 6 years ago. If you took the proportion, the percentage from the last election, we had 50 Greens. So claiming to being some kind of rebalancing, it's a long, long, long way out of balance.
Always good to speak to you. Thanks, Natalie. Baroness Bennett, Natalie Bennett, Green Party peer, former leader of the Green Party. If you bumped into Sir Keir or Rachel in the pub, what would you say? Andrew says, I would congratulate them for managing to find a pub that's still open, has not been forced to close as a result of their punitive business taxes. James, you want to talk about that? We'll do it at the other side of the news if you can hold. A lot of you are responding to the call from Martin, which, by the way, we did give him a cover name, so we, of course, covered his anonymity to a degree. Jim just suddenly said, I found my mind blown. I didn't expect that. Please give the caller help. Fumi in High Wycombe, my prayers and thoughts are with that family. It's tragic to hear a child going through so much trauma over their body. There's so much more to life than what we look like and our sexuality. This is how a shallow world has brainwashed children into believing image matters more than morals. Scott in Glasgow, if you're not old enough to get a tattoo, you're not old enough to decide your gender. You know, until I spoke to Martin and he was telling me about his son, but now... When you hear that poor chap has tried to remove his breasts with scissors, that tells you the severity of what that person is going through, doesn't it? We'll stay with that. We're talking pubs. And also after the news, a celebration of a best-selling author, Sophie Kinsella, who's died aged just 55. Here she is speaking to Good Morning America in July of last year, how she handled her diagnosis of what was to be terminal brain cancer.
I think we just stay in the moment and just think, right now, things are good. Mm. And you can't
you can't expect any more than that.
8:46, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Resident doctors are to take part in an online ballot to decide whether to go ahead with a pre-Christmas strike. Ministers have announced a new target to halve long-term rough sleeping by the next election. And Venezuela's accused the US of piracy after American troops stormed and seized an oil tanker. LBC weather, dry and bright for many places, but becoming cloudier through the day, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 28 at the A12 and 27 at the M11. It's because a van broke down early. It's been recovered for a while, but it's still very slow. There are problems now on the North Circular Road going northbound up to the Redbridge roundabout. It's slow from the Ilford flyover, and that's because a car has broken down. Gatwick Express services are still suspended. That's the entire line. And also severe delays on the Central and Northern lines. Also, if you were planning on flying to Portugal today, you are being recommended to check with your individual airline before setting off to the airport. Various delays and cancellations because of a strike in Portugal.
This is LBC.
Hello, I'm a National Lottery scratch card. You normally see me in the shops, but you know where I'd really like to be? Round yours at Christmas. I'm a great Christmas guest. You can use me as a festive place setting for a bit of fun. And you might even win a few quid. At the very least, I'll distract Uncle Dave from saying something inappropriate.
Oh. Buy a National Lottery scratch card and add some play to Christmas. Gift responsibly. Rules and procedures apply. Players and gifters must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at two. We said three. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers on my birthday. And 95 minutes late, but it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop, plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado, life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60, max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
A Southern Train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields, or simply relax with a podcast, playlist, or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice. So you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
What would you say if you walked into a pub and suddenly, as you ordered your pint, your glass of wine, your vodka and tonic, whatever it might be, you were standing next to Sakir or Rachel Reeves? James is in Dover. James, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I think I would turn and look at both of them, even if it wasn't my pub and it was my local. I'd turn to them and say, in the words of the late Peggy Mitchell from EastEnders, get out of my pub.
Brilliantly done. I have one correction. It's the late Barbara Windsor who played Peggy Mitchell, just to clarify on that. Yes. But that's the old journalist speaking. You don't own a pub, but you run a business. Tell me your background story, James.
I own my own catering business. I've been in catering for the last 8 years.
How's that going?
And it's... Well, we're extremely well-known. We're a very well-established brand. I'm not going to say the brand on air because... we're currently in difficult times, like a lot of other businesses at the moment.
I hope not terminal times.
not terminal times, but very difficult times in the aspect that we are phoning up the likes of HMRC and being put on payment plans. We're being asked what assets we've got by HMRC to sell.
Right.
And that's like, well, if I sell any of my assets, then I don't have to fear. I haven't got a business.
How many people do you employ, or are you a one-man band?
I currently employ 70 people.
Wow.
Yes, it went from a hobby of just me and my wife, and it's now expanded into a huge operation over 8 years.
Now, let me ask you this. 8 years, so quickly, Nick, get your sums right. 6.5 under Conservative administration, 1.5, broadly speaking, under Labour. What differences do you note, or are they both as bad as each other as regards looking after new businesses?
To be perfectly honest with you, both as bad as one another. I think that we need change. We've got a chancellor who's never run her own business. Mm. We've got a business secretary who's never run his own business. We've got people who are telling us how to operate and how we've got to pay these taxes, which are totally unheard of. And this is coming from people that have no background. We need people who have run successful businesses. We need people who have come from a working class background up to running their own businesses successfully, who are able to financially support themselves for a period of time, where we can vote them in and we can say, yeah, we agree to this, and hold them accountable. These people are not accountable. Rachel Reeves is not listening to anything we're saying.
No, I agree with that, actually. Who was the last politician you admired lastly, James? Really?
Do you know what? There's actually only one person I could actually think of that hasn't actually been in politics, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, was refused to be involved in politics, was Richard Branson.
Right.
I think that somebody who's got successful businesses, who knows how the finances work, it makes sense to have somebody in business running the country or running the country's finances. I mean, we're literally an unpaid tax collector. I get to the quarter, I look in my account, and I go, oh, yeah, things are great. And then all of a sudden, the revenue man comes and kicks the door in and literally takes everything away, and we're left with absolutely nothing.
What keeps you going?
Sorry?
What keeps you going?
Hope. Right. I was literally, the last, when the budget came out, I sat there in hope. We were all sat in the office, like, waiting. And when she said, for my friends in hospitality, and then she just mentioned about the business rates and just brushed it over, and that was it.
And if you've so minded, you can see her, the Chancellor, in front of a panel of MPs yesterday, where it's found out she's got her numbers totally wrong, but that will come as no surprise to you. James, I wish you a better change in fortune. I hope the wind starts blowing in your sails and you can get the business going again and you can do a restructuring deal with HMRC and whatever. Just, and 70 people, of course, they're lying. This is what I'm afraid politicians, thanks, James, they don't realise. There's 70 people. Well, they'll be all right this Christmas, but what's the chances in the new year? Some of them will have to go. What are the chances if he doesn't have a change in fortune? All of them might have to go. This is what they don't realise. They are not wealth creators or job creators. Two other matters. And we say farewell at just 55 to a trailblazing and best-selling author. 55, Sophie Kinsella. Here's a clip from the trailer of A Confessions of a Shopaholic, based on the books by Sophie Kinsella. Starred Isla Fisher as lead character Rebecca Bloomwood.
Rebecca Bloomwood. Dress, Zac Posen. Belt, Todd Oldham Vintage. Bag, Gucci. Thing when you see someone cute and he smiles and your heart kind of goes like warm butter sliding down hot toast. Well, that's what it's like when I see a store.
Following her diagnosis with a form of brain cancer, Sophie spoke with Good Morning America in July last year with her husband alongside her, Henry Wickham, and she praised him for his support.
He stayed with me in the hospital the whole time. I once said to him, I got very teary at one stage, and I said, oh my God, but you didn't sign up for this. Mm-hmm. And do you know what he said? He said, yes, I did, in sickness and in health. I think we just stay in the moment and just think, right now, things are good. Mm. And you can't expect any more than that.
My goodness, what poignant words. Maureen Baig is a former teacher, now TV presenter. And Maureen wrote her dissertation on the literary significance of Shopaholic series. Joins me now. Obviously a sad day for everyone, particularly for you being so close, but can you briefly explain why you alighted upon that body of work and the significance that you put into your treatment of it? Good morning.
Good morning. It was a really, really devastating shock, actually. And I'm not somebody who usually kind of sees a famous person and feels really personally connected, but I actually did, and I know for so many young women, feel really personally connected to Sophie Kinsella. I think her books gave cultural and literary visibility to contemporary women's experiences. I think the first Rob Pollock book came out when I was about 11 years old. We grew up reading her books and falling in love with her, with her characters, and feeling like we were the lead heroines. And
but how did she get into your and women your similar age, how did she get into your heads? What was her trick? Not trick, sorry. What was her skill in that area?
It was a gift. She really refined what chick lit was. Her books were laugh out loud humour, really brought joy, like the perfect escapism, really brought joy into people's lives. They were genuinely romantic and modern and really, really clever. So recently, literally a couple of months ago, there was a big celebration event to celebrate the works and the life of Sophie Kinsella, organised by some great other authors, Jojo Moyes, Mike Gale. And there were people there. I was there, my sister was there, and there were people there who had flown over from all over the world. They'd flown over from America. They had landed just a few hours before just to be there.
Shows the importance of it. Maureen, thank you. Maureen Baker is a former teacher, now TV presenter. As I said, unfortunately, Sophie Kinsella has died at age 55. She met her husband, Henry Wickham. They met on their first night at Oxford University. They married at 21. They have five children, aged between 13 and 29. And obviously all condolences to them and the rest of the family and friends. 2 to 9. Let's finish this hour on a call coming back to the conversation I had with Martin, who told us that his 10-year-old daughter takes scissors to... Well, sorry, he would say his. I'm so sorry. Takes scissors to his breasts, and he is going to seek to have surgery for his son. Danny's in Barnstall. Danny, you're on the radio. What did you make of that call? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I felt so sorry for Martin. Really sorry for him.
Absolutely agree with you.
But I think one of the things that struck me when Martin called was that you asked about any mental health the child was getting.
Yes.
And he said nobody wants to address it. And I think, do you think the problem might lie there? You know, I think...
We're not helping that lad. We're not helping that family, are we?
Well, sorry, could you say that again?
I say we're not helping the boy, the person, I'm sorry. We're not helping the person, and we're not helping the family. That stuck out to me as well.
Yeah, I think from a young age, when children do show signs like Stella, the phone call from Stella before was brilliant.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's too many teachers in schools saying, well, are you in the wrong body?
Yeah.
Are you this? And the kids beginning to believe that. And I think, you know, they need time to, definitely need time to adjust. It just terrifies me.
But I don't think Martin's son does he? He's taking scissors to his, quote, breasts.
Yeah, that's terrible. But then, you know, if someone was taking a blade to their wrist, you'd get them help from a mental health expert. You'd go down that. I would personally.
Yes.
I'd think before I'd spend the money going to mutilate a child, I'd try and get the help to see if there's anything we can do to.
Good point that you make, Danny. Thank you for that. Finish on a lighter note. If Keir Starmer or Rachel Reeves were standing at the bar when you walked into a pub, what would you tell them? Johnny, where's your one gone? Johnny, can I say your name? Yes, okay. Johnny Bromley, I work hard in my pub to try and get people through the door, so I'd invite them in to see how quiet they've made our industry. They'd be charged full price, but get extremely good service from us, as there'd be no one else in the pub during the week at lunchtime. So that's telling. This is from Jamie in Devon. I can't serve you as a pint. Sorry, I can only afford to run this pub long enough for you to drink a half. That's how you're feeling. Coming up after the news, the idea the Justice Secretary will wipe out what are called child criminal records. On LBC last night, consultant forensic psychiatrist Duncan Harding said...
As adults, our narrative is built on a foundation of our childhood, and I think we build our own stories, and I think what we need in society is social consequences.
We'll come back to that government initiative as outlined in the first hour to try and prevent thousands of people becoming homeless and helping those who already are. And it would appear another failing here, how special needs pupils are being failed in their early years of education. Those stories and more follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
For
from Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock. Resident doctors in England are being balloted on a new offer aimed at averting a pre-Christmas strike. The proposals to be voted on in the coming days include an expansion of training places. LBC's Guy Stewart has more details.
Resident doctors represented by the BMA will vote online on this deal over the coming days, with the survey closing on Monday, just 2 days before the strike is due to happen. Health Secretary Wes Streeting says it is a comprehensive deal which delivers on tackling competition from overseas. Of course, job security being a big reason for this strike. The union has been heavily criticised for organising one during a winter already seeing unprecedented demand. It says this fresh deal is precisely because of the threat of a walkout. Guy Stewart, LBC, University College London Hospital.
Flu cases in England are at their highest level on record for this time of year. The Health Secretary's warned of an ongoing sharp rise in cases, with a peak still to come. The latest NHS figures are due to be released this morning. Ministers have announced a target to halve long-term rough sleeping by the next general election. The £3.5 billion strategy also includes a push to reduce the time families spend living in B&Bs. A government minister's defended the nomination of 25 new Labour members of the House of Lords. They include the Iceland supermarket chairman, Richard Walker, and ex-Number 10 communications director, Matthew Doyle. Sir Keir Starmer's previously spoken in favour of abolishing the Lords. The homelessness minister, Alison McGovern, told Nick that Labour is still committed to making changes.
What we are doing is getting rid of the hereditaries, because it is not right in this day and age, in 2025, that anyone inherit their right to legislate. The next step is to limit the number by introducing an age limit. Unfortunately, it is true to say that the House of Lords has got in the way of some of the flagship policies of the Labour government. Right. So we do need to make sure that we appoint good people from all walks of life.
There's been another sharp escalation in tensions between the US and Venezuela. American troops stormed and seized an oil tanker in the latest part of President Trump's pressure campaign. Officials say it was carrying sanctioned oil from Venezuela and Iran. And The News Agents has won Best Podcast Show at the first ever Global Player Awards. Christiane Amanpour presents The X-Files with Jamie Rubin, picked up the biggest new podcast. The awards celebrate the most listened to artists, podcast and new music acts. And you can see the full list on Global Player. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 96.54. That's down a point. The pound buys $1.33 and the euro 14. LBC weather, many places dry and bright this morning, becoming cloudier through the day with some rain arriving in the west, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Come on, guys, we're late!
Mum, can I borrow your phone quickly?
Are we there yet?
Can someone check we're going the right way on maps, please?
Are we there yet?
Oh, my phone's out of battery.
Here you go, use mine.
Can someone call Nan to let her know we're on our way?
Oh, are we there yet?
Guesting this Christmas? You need the UK's best mobile network. EE does more.
UK's best network. Root metrics data H125. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 5 minutes after nine on Thursday, the 11th of December. Coming up in this hour, how the Justice Secretary plans to wipe out what are called child criminal records. We'll give you details. Some of the convictions would stay, but exactly what would they be? How widespread would the wipe out be? In other news, trying to help the homeless and indeed trying to prevent people becoming homeless. Speaking with me in the first hour of the show, Minister for Local Government and Homelessness, Alison McGovern, told me...
The figure that I am most bothered about is the 2,000 children who are in B&B accommodation and have been for more than 6 weeks this Christmas. That is already unlawful and has been for 20 years.
And staying with children, how we're failing those most in need. In the field of education, special needs pupils failed in the early years. We'll have more later in this hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Question. What is the level of crime that should be wiped out, expunged from someone's records? Nicking a bicycle as a kid? Does that matter? Being involved in a bit of a pub fight where no one got hurt? Something more serious? A little bit of ABH, GBH, as a child, where would the line be? because childhood criminal records for thousands of people will be wiped out under plans being considered by David Lammy. And it's worth reminding you, whatever you think of Mr. Lammy, he's prepared to take big decisions. I don't think in this case, by the way, sorry, in the case I'm about to mention, the right one, jury trials. I think that was wrong. Let's work our way through this one, though. Justice Secretary is to review the current system in order to prevent people's childhood convictions from blighting their future job prospects. Now, if you're listening to this, and as a lad, you did nick a bicycle, or as a young woman, you did unfortunately drink vodka on a street corner with some of your girlfriends and then stupidly committed a bit of shop theft or smashed a window or three, has that blighted you? Have you really struggled to get a job because of something you did as a kid? Mr. Lammy is considering simplifying the system to ensure that checks are proportionate to their crime. Evidence shows people in their 50s, 60s and 70s have found childhood offences such as stealing a bicycle or fighting in the street were still disclosed to potential employers. But Mr. Lammy's plans face criticism over whether any changes would erase more serious offences such as drug dealing or harassment. He said, this is Mr. Lammy, we will consider opportunities to simplify the criminal records regime to ensure it is clear and proportionate, particularly in relationship to childhood offences. Now, Mr. Lammy will face a potential backlash over the definition of what is a... And I'm asking you, what constitutes a serious offence? A child caught dealing drugs? Being racially abusive to a bus driver? Should that stay on their record forever? I need to tell you certain offences such as affray, violent disorder, assault resisting arrest, arson and racial harassment have to be disclosed to prospective employers. And even if you were not involved in a... even if a person was involved in a pub fight where no one was injured. Wow, we've got some definitions to do here, so let's turn to some experts. First up, Penelope Gibbs, who's director and founder of Transform Justice. Now, that's a national charity advocating for a fairer and more humane justice system. OK, what are the sort of offences that should stay on someone's criminal record from their youth, would you say? Good morning.
Good morning. I mean, the ones that will stay whatever Lammy does in our system are the ones that get you a child prison sentence of over 2 years. So anything over 2 years, which is murder, attempted murder, manslaughter, any of those will stay on the record. But I would say as well about the government that they're working on proposals. So there's everything to play for people like myself as to where these proposals end up and how helpful they are to people who still have to declare something they did when they're 13 when they are 70.
You are involved in something called Fair Checks. What is that seeking to bring about?
It's seeking to produce a more proportionate and fair system where people who have led a crime-free life for years don't have, in effect, a life sentence of having things come up on their record, okay, which are minor and or historic, as it were.
Can you can you give my listeners, Penelope, some examples of where this has happened, what the crime was, and the impact it had on them as adults?
Well, I'll give a recent example so that child is unfortunately, well, is not an adult yet, but there was a 13-year-old who unfortunately was involved in one of the riots post Southport.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she was caught on CCTV kicking the door of an asylum seeker's hotel. Now, that is a really bad thing to do, for which she needed to be accountable, definitely. In the end, she was prosecuted and got the least court conviction, which is called a referral order. She was 13. She pleaded guilty. She did what she needed to do for that sentence. That kicking the door will be on her record until she's 70. If she wants to kind of work as a dinner lady or as a taxi driver or as somebody who works in the premises of a hospital or whatever. It's not every job, because we have different levels of criminal record checks for different jobs. But if she just wants to be a volunteer reader at her grandchildren's school, age 65, that kicking the door age 13 comes up.
I mean, the most high-profile case of this recently, Penelope, is, of course, the allegations concerning Nigel Farage, which allegedly at the age of 14 he used racist and anti-Semitic language. So, in your book, that counts for nothing now.
Well, he wasn't arrested, convicted, etc. And I think it counts in terms of information, and we have that information. But in terms of actually employment checks, which you need to do for many, many roles, I don't think something that somebody did when they were 13 should come up on an employment check. It happens because Nigel Farage is incredibly high profile, that information is circulating in the public domain, and it's disputed by him, I would say. So what convictions come up on employment checks and volunteer checks, and that is what blights a lot of people's lives in terms of wanting to work and get good jobs.
Grateful for your input, Penelope Gibbs. You're part of this Fair Checks campaign. You're director and founder of Transform Justice. Listening, Peter Squires, who's a professor of criminology at the University of Brighton, joins me now. Professor, can you find where the line should be drawn? Good morning.
Good morning. I'm not sure that I'm the best person to draw such lines. I think the general principle about things committed while you're an adolescent should not be held against you for the entirety of your life is generally a good one. The criminological evidence is to the effect that the worst thing that can happen to a young person, I'm talking teenage, is not that they may have done things wrong. After all, 17, 18 is the peak age for masculine offending. A lot of kids do it. The worst thing that can happen to you is you get that criminal record. You then may get a prison sentence or a youth training order sentence. You then get further drawn into criminality, and then that record blights your career throughout life when you go for jobs. So I think the broad principle of the Rehabilitation of Offenders Act, which was a kind of staple of what we were trying to do, is bring people out of crime, is a good one. I don't know the evidence on this, where that line should necessarily fall. I think your last speaker talked about violent offences. I think it would also relate to sexual offences and any offences involving aggravation through racism. So that there are some principles there already, but the broad idea of offender rehabilitation has been accepted for a long time.
What research has there been done into the fact, as you just mentioned, Professor, that typically with young men the crimes occur when they're aged 17 to 18?
There's lots of work on the whole question of recidivism, and the question of whether it's better to divert someone from the criminal justice system and deal with them almost as a pre-court hearing, as we've just heard, through a referral order, rather than incarcerating someone. You know, it's the old prisons as schools or universities of crime argument, that if you're only associating in groups of other offenders, a lot of criminal habits get passed on there. The prisons are one of the best places where gangs recruit. So there's a lot of kind of criticism of how the sort of institutionalization of offenders recycles the problem of crime. There's a rich vein of research on this, and the evidence is generally quite compelling that the worst thing you can do to a young person, especially for the least serious offences, is to escalate the risks of criminality by treating them as offenders.
Peter Squires is Professor of Criminology at the University of Brighton. Thanks for your time this morning, sir. Philip has texted, I'm so sorry. I had my 16-year-old arrested for taking my bank card and withdrawing money. I wanted to teach him stealing was a crime. His record later prevented him from getting a job as cabin crew on an airline. Could you have shocked your teenage son for nicking? It was totally wrong, by the way, for taking a bank card and nicking and withdrawing money. Would you have dobbed your son in? Should his man have dobbed his son in? Stopped him getting a job. We'll take your views on that after the 9:16 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Resident doctors are to take part in an online ballot to decide whether to go ahead with a pre-Christmas strike. Ministers have announced a new target to halve long-term rough sleeping by the next election. And Venezuela's accused the US of piracy after American troops stormed and seized an oil tanker. LBC weather, dry and bright for many places, but becoming cloudier through the day, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 28 at the A12 and 27 at the M11. It's because a van broke down early. It's been recovered for a while, but it's still very slow. There are problems now on the North Circular Road going northbound up to the Redbridge roundabout. It's slow from the Ilford flyover, and that's because a car has broken down. Gatwick Express services are still suspended. That's the entire line. And also severe delays on the Central and Northern lines. Also, if you are planning on flying to Portugal today, you are being recommended to check with your individual airline before setting off to the airport. Various delays and cancellations because of a strike in Portugal.
This is LBC.
This Christmas at Tesco, get selected meat joints and boneless salmon sides better than half price with your Tesco Club card. That's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland. Beef and lamb ends 28th of the 12th. Hawk, 6th of the 1st. Gammon, 13th of the 1st. Salmon, 1st of the 1st. Club card required.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wet suit's a good look on you, Steve.
Actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the River Cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia and we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
With Lloyd's Home Insurance, there's £50,000 to be won. When you cover the glassware, no one's actually allowed to use. Or the Garden Shed, a.k.a. your fortress of calm. Rated excellent on Trustpilot. You can be confident with your cover when you take out a new home insurance policy and be in for a chance to win £50,000. Get a quote with Lloyds today. Buy a new home insurance policy direct from us by the 31st of December 2025. Offer T's and C's apply. Policy terms, limits and exclusions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to you, Jason Patrick says if a minor commits a crime, the parents should be held responsible. That would cut juvenile crime overnight. So you know at all times, do you, where your, if you've got, you would know where your 15-year-old child is? I don't know, I think that is a little bit tough, isn't it? This one comes in, I wanted to find this here. Can I say your name? Yes, Louise. I'm a police officer of 20 years. I'd invite people to consider the fact the vast majority of minor offences are dealt with out of court in the first instances. In the main, it is a serious or repetitive offence that results in a criminal record. The criminal justice system is packed with people who want to achieve the best outcome for children. Jason's in Wimbledon. What's your personal story, Jason? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Nick, I'm so pleased someone's talking about this. It's not just jobs and stuff like that. It's your whole life. It really does. It's like a chain around my neck. I mean, if I was to go out and just as a normal person going about my business and someone was out there and someone started on my wife, for instance, and then I went, something happened and I had to help her, something happened in court, I'd go to court and they'd treat me like I was 35, 40 years ago, Nick, because in black and white, it looks bad. I tried...
Okay, let's just get a few facts in. Do you mind my asking, roughly, what's your age now?
I'm 60 now, Nick.
60 now. So what was happening, did you say 35 years ago?
Yeah, when I had a very bad upbringing, Nick, and a very bad childhood, and I spent a lot of time in and out of trouble when I was younger.
What sort of trouble?
Quite serious trouble, Nick. I was into robbery and escaped from prison and stuff like that. Some of it was quite violent. Now, I do realise...
Was there assault in there? ABH? GBH?
I got actually got done for kidnapping, Nick.
Right.
When I was younger. Now that sounds bad. It wasn't.
Well, I think it is bad, by the way. I don't think it sounds bad, Jason. I think we can say it is bad to kidnap someone against their will.
Yeah, it wasn't. I kidnapped four prison officers in a van, Nick, and I've spent the rest of my life trying to put it right, Nick. Now, I don't want any special treatment, but I do. I would like people to understand that people can change, Nick.
Right.
People can change, and I've changed. I've proven myself in society. I've proven myself with everything, Nick. I'm actually a different person.
Right.
But I just believe that there should be... I wanted to become a probation officer a little while ago because I wanted to try and help other people involved in crimes and that. Now, because of my criminal
record... What's the first thing you have to do to confront when you've been engaged in serious criminal behaviour? How do you reform yourself?
You have to want to yourself, Nick. You have to get the right guidance. You have to just keep telling yourself daily that that life is absolutely terrible.
But do you accept the severity of your crime?
100%, Nick.
What made 100%. You do it? What were you thinking?
I was, Nick, from a five-year-old, I was brought up in crime. I didn't actually have any say in it from a five-year-old. I was brought up in crime, sent out to steal with adults when I was very young.
Right.
I was in and out of care. I got abused in care, Nick, quite violently at one point. That's all been dealt with, Nick. I've tried as best as I can, Nick, to put my past completely behind me.
What have you done for a job for the last 35 years?
I started my own window cleaning round 30 years ago, Nick, and I've got a lot of customers that would ring up now and tell you that I'm probably one of the most trustworthy people that they know, because I just haven't done it. Nick, I've completely changed my life. Whether people believe you can change or not, I have. I really have changed my life.
What would you say to your younger self who decided it was a good idea to kidnap four prison officers in a van? What would you say to him?
I say, you're joking. I say no, because at the end of the day, I didn't get away from anything, Nick. At the end of the day, I still had to do my time, and it's terrible to treat people badly. Absolutely terrible. And I don't do it, and I couldn't do it now, Nick. I wouldn't be possible to do it now. I'm a completely different person.
When they got hold of you, what did the other prison guards do once they freed their mates?
I actually got away, and I was on the run for 8.5 years, Nick, at that point.
Right.
It was during that time that I had a child, and I started to get a lovely wife next to me. I started to get my life together. It wasn't easy, but I'd love to say, I have said sorry to one of my victims, Nick, from my crimes years and years, 40 years ago. She phoned me up last weekend, but we're such good friends now. It is such an amazing little story, Nick. But
I want to hear a little bit more. What was the crime you committed against that woman?
Well, it wasn't against that woman. She was involved in a robbery at a shop.
She was part of your team, or she was in the shop?
No, she worked in the place, and she actually grabbed hold of me during the robbery. And she told me Jesus loved me in the middle of a robbery.
This is going everywhere.
Right. Yeah, I know it is, Nick. It's crazy, absolutely crazy.
So, are you using a weapon? Do you have a baseball bat or a gun, or what have you got?
No, I've been in the past. I have carried guns, Nick. I've had guns pointed at my head and everything, Nick.
Right.
I had a terrible life.
Yes, you have. What kind of shop were you robbing on this occasion?
Antique shop.
So you're nicking some, I don't know, medals, coins, vases, whatever the heck it is, and this woman grabs you and says, you know Jesus loves you.
Yeah.
And how did you respond, Jason?
I took her hand in my hand, and I kissed her hand, and I said to her, you are a lovely lady. And that was the start of an absolutely amazing friendship, Nick. And
how did she get your number? How did you get hers?
It was absolutely crazy, because I went to a... When I got arrested, I went to prison, and I went to a prison fellowship meeting. One of the people there had known this lady and put her in touch with me.
Oh, my goodness.
And she's actually friends... Honestly, I love her with all my heart, and she loves me, Nick. And I'm going down to see her again this weekend.
Oh, the lovely lady you met and you had your child by, are you still with her?
Yes, I am, Nick. I've been with her for the best part of 50 years now, Nick.
So she was with you in the bad times when you were deciding to kidnap prison officers?
She was the start of people trying to put me right, Nick. Yeah, she was, yeah.
Where would you be without her?
I would either be dead or I would be doing probably a massive, massive another prison sentence, Nick.
Have you ever worked out how many years you've done in prison?
Yeah, in and out of care and prisons and all institutions over 15 years, Nick.
And now a window cleaner in Wimbledon.
Cheers, Nick. Cheers. I am, but people know me, Nick, and I'm not ashamed. I'm not ashamed of who I am now. I'm ashamed of my past. I'm not ashamed of who I am now.
Who's going to play you in the movie? I'm thinking Ray Winston. What do you reckon?
Yeah, that's not a bad idea, Nick.
We'll have Keira Knightley as the girl whose hand you kiss in the antique shop.
Yeah.
What did you nick at the antique shop? What did you make off with? What did you steal?
It was a lot of antiques and that, Nick. We actually didn't get away with the stuff because there was a massive car chase, helicopters and everything else. And we actually had to leave the car, and that's when I went on the run for it was after that. I got arrested, then went to prison, then escaped from the prison van.
Jason, I'll leave it there. Mobland 2 coming to a screen near you soon. Jason, thank you. Extraordinary. More calls coming in on that, but I did mention we would be doing this story, and a total change in pace. Britain is, quotes, creating a generation of lost children. Preschoolers with special educational needs and disabilities send missing out on vital early years support. In many cases, they never make it through the nursery door. Stephen Kingdom is campaign manager of Disabled Children's Partnership. I'm sorry to come to you so late, sir, but that was an extraordinary story, and I hope in some way that you can appreciate why I've come to you a little bit later. In a sentence, what does the Disabled Children's Partnership do? Morning to you.
Hi, yeah, we're a campaigning coalition of more than 130 charities, parent groups, other organisations that campaigns for better support for disabled children and their family and children with special educational needs.
Stephen, hardly a week seems to go by when we don't hear a story where we're failing this crucial part of or group of children. Why are we getting it so wrong? What needs to happen?
I think this story is really important because actually what needs to happen is earlier intervention so that we can meet children's needs more quickly. We actually, coincidentally, we were in Parliament yesterday meeting MPs to talk about a new report we've published, which has shown that the economic benefits of earlier intervention for children with speech, language and communication needs, the total economic benefits could be £8 billion. So there's real savings and real long-term economic benefits to be made if we get early intervention right.
Why would it appear that so many local authorities, education authorities, are not getting involved in this fashion, Stephen?
I think that's a really difficult question to answer. I think sometimes it's false economies, managing budgets one year to the next rather than looking at the longer term implications. And that's why we see the overall special educational needs and disability budgets rising, and yet outcomes for children are not getting any better.
We talk about outcomes. I think it was last month. It was certainly very recently. I had the government minister on talking about the Best Start family hubs and directing hundreds of millions of pounds of our money towards them. What difference do you think that will make?
I think that's potentially really positive. I think that focus on early years, those family hubs where different services can come together, can meet families, provide them with support, give parents support in how they can care for their children, and specific targeted support that helps them meet the needs of individual children and those individual children's needs. So if those family hubs are rolled out in the right way with the right expertise and the right staffing, they could be really positive.
Is it your sense this government is at least on the right track and are listening, or is it really just going to be empty rhetoric?
I think we don't know. They've launched a major conversation with parents and with the sector about their special education needs. Disability reforms, that's really welcome. We're looking forward to a white paper to come out, we expect at the end of January. We're hopeful it'll have positive things in it, but the worry is always that Treasury-led short-term savings might scupper that progress.
And can I just check, you've never spent 8.5 years on the run after kidnapping a group of prison guards following a bungled heist of an antique shop? You've never done that, Stephen. It's time to confess.
No, I haven't. I feel I've failed, really.
Well, it was a hell of an act to follow, and you've done very well. Stephen Kingdom, thanks for your time. Campaign manager at the Disabled Children's Partnership. An important point to make, and I want to get your calls on that. Stephen, thank you for your time. The nation creating a generation of lost children, preschoolers with SEND, missing out on vital early years. Some, this is awful. Some often don't even get through the nursery door. Does that apply to you, your child, or your children? We'll take your calls on that. It's 9:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. Newstime, Thomas Watts.
Resident doctors are being balloted to decide whether to go ahead with a pre-Christmas strike. The government's put forward a new offer to the British Medical Association, including an expansion of training places. Ministers have announced a target to halve long-term rough sleeping by the next general election. The £3.5 billion strategy also includes a push to reduce the time families spend living in B&Bs. Venezuela has accused the US of piracy after American troops stormed and seized an oil tanker. It marks another escalation in tensions between the countries after a series of US strikes on drug traffickers. LBC weather dry and bright for many places, becoming cloudier through the day with rain arriving in the west. A high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's continue our conversation about David Lammy's ambitions and what exactly constitutes a serious crime. Paul's in Worcester. Paul, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Always good to speak to you.
Good time
I'm just retired now after a good number of years as a paramedic, and I spent my last few years working in custody. And as a custody healthcare professional, we had to see all juveniles, all of those under 18, brought into custody. And one of the things that I used to find immensely depressing and sad was these young people, many of them who are there for the very first time, who are scared, who have done something that's stupid, they're now going to be potentially judged for the rest of their life on this on this snapshot of this day's events. And one of the things I think that we could do, and I do think we should take it seriously, and we should risk assess, we should be robust in how we deal with things. But the thing that these youngsters need is they need direction, they need education, they need mentorship, they need look into the future. Because yeah, if you had judged me on my 13, 14, 15-year-old self, nobody would employ me. I was an idiot.
Okay, now we need to get a definition of what you mean by idiot.
Well, I think as, certainly for myself, I mean, I joined the army to get my life together. And
how old were you when you joined the army?
I was late teens.
And that worked for me.
We need to back up a little, if you don't mind, sir. What was it you were up to at 13 or 14, though?
I wasn't up to anything, but, you know, what I was a fool. You know, I didn't know
anything. You weren't kidnapping prison officers?
Oh, good God, no. No, but that last gentleman's a very interesting example. Oh, you know, what he did was some very serious stuff.
Yeah.
And I think as somebody so young, we should be looking at, you know, what is going on here? How can we try and stop this cycle of events? And how can we, you know, and if we can do that and we can monitor that and, you know, he lives a good, healthy, industrious
life. Where do you draw the line?
I don't know. I'm going to be honest.
Well, I mean, if you were Robert Thompson or John Venables, who was involved in the abduction and murder of James Bulger.
I think that's a bridge too far.
Okay.
I think murder,
so where do we draw the line?
I think anything where someone's been to prison for a significant amount of time, like murder,
that's not a bad idea. So anything that attracts, let's just the purpose of debate, anything that attract a 20-year sentence or something like that.
Absolutely. But I do think one of the other things we should do as a society is I think we should monitor these people as time goes on to find out exactly what's going on. And I think the bottom line is education. I think education is the key thing to this and the environment that they're in. And they need to be able to see the wood for the trees. I just think, you know, giving somebody a criminal record for life for things that are quite, they're serious, but in the grand scheme of life, they're not, if that makes sense.
How long were you in? I think you said the army, was it the military?
I did, yeah. I only served 4 years.
What did it do for you?
I come from a fairly disciplined background, but, you know, I think I pushed against that. But what it did was it gave me a pause in life. It gave me a chance to move away from things and to hit the reset button and to look at how I can be productive in life and get that good chance. And, you know, in those days, coming out of the forces was a springboard into other things.
And, of course, you explained what you did, what you do now, or what you do for a living. You don't think you'd have got there without the military background?
No, I don't. No, because also the military background allowed me to believe in my... The one thing I lacked before going into the forces was a belief in myself. I had no self-worth.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, one of the things that we all need in life is some self-worth and some direction.
Really enjoyed our conversation. Thanks for that, Paul. Well done. What great. And thank you for your service. And great to hear what the military achieved. Let's move to another matter. And sadly, for too many people who serve in the military, when they come out, they've lost that discipline. And many of them end up sleeping on the streets, as you probably know. And if you're listening in the first hour, you'll know that the government is determined to help all of those who are sleeping on the streets. The number of people who are homeless this Christmas is a whisker under 400,000, 382,618. 175,000 children live in temporary accommodation. If last night was an average night, 4,667 people will have slept rough. Hopefully not military veterans, by the way, because there's a special programme for them that you might recall we got involved in a few months ago. Well, the government wants to do something about this, and there's money being directed towards it. And in the first hour, it was explained by the Minister of State for Local Government and Hopelessness, Alison McGovern.
That money is largely for local authorities, so the big bulk of that money is for local authorities because they have the duty to prevent homelessness. So the law says that, you know, as I said before, if you're at risk of homelessness, you go to your council and they should be able to offer you help and support. We give local authorities a big annual grant to do that work, and in recent weeks, we've increased that amount of money in year to try to boost that work that they're able to do. We're also introducing some new resources for local authorities and for mayors to try to help them innovate. So to give one example of that, we know from some councils, for example, Waltham Forest in London has managed to radically reduce its B&B use, but in some places, use of B&Bs for families is going up. So we're introducing a new £30 million fund for those areas that are most affected so that they can change the way that they're helping support families and not use B&Bs anymore.
Can you give us an idea of the scale of the problem here? One newspaper, the Daily Mirror, has done an in-depth investigation. How many people do we believe are homeless this Christmas?
So, every year about 300,000 people go to their council and say they're at risk of homelessness. Some of that can be prevented, but not enough, hence the new goal. We do an annual snapshot count of the number of people who are rough sleeping, and at the last count, it was about 4,667 people. Those numbers of people rough sleeping go up and down month on month, but we take an annual count, which is the official measure. I'm sorry to say, Nick, there's 174,000 children in temporary accommodation right now.
Yes.
And, you know, the figure that I am most bothered about as I'm sat here talking to you is the 2,000 children who are in B&B accommodation and have been for more than 6 weeks this Christmas. That is already unlawful and has been for 20 years. And if we do nothing else, we have to reduce that number.
Well, you're spot on with the numbers because the Daily Mirror, as I say, has done a dossier and you've hit every figure. But there is a contributing factor to this, of course, which is the amount of people who have arrivals in this country who have to be housed, asylum seekers and others. Do you have a figure for that? How many of those are in hotels or HMOs?
I don't have the figure off the top of my head for that.
All right. Well, I do. And if you put the figures together, it's 50,000. But the pressure that puts on the system that you and your colleagues are trying to put right is immense. So what are we doing about that?
So that is too many, and you'll know that the government is reducing the backlog. The backlog of asylum decisions is coming down. I've been working with my colleague Alex Norris, who's the Minister for Asylum, to try and work out how, once somebody's got a decision about that they are, you know, refugee and that they need to be able to rebuild their life, that we get them out of asylum accommodation as quickly as possible and housed and employed and paying taxes and able to contribute. That is the work that we need to do. There's another aspect to it, which is unfortunately one of the problems of homelessness and temporary accommodation is bits of the government not talking to each other and passing information on. So as part of this strategy, we're making sure that councils know when refugees are leaving accommodation so that they can help support them.
A lofty ambition. Is it attainable? Michael in Maida Vale. Michael, what did you make of the words and indeed the direction where the government is taking us? Good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. I listen to you most mornings. I have been on before.
Okay, so
Couple of comments. First of all, how about using the one-in, one-out system and have one person into an hotel and take a migrant out of an hotel?
Yes, where do we put that migrant?
Anywhere you like, because most of them are a lot of them are illegal anyway. They've no right to be here. Why should they have priority over ex-servicemen who actually served their country? And I feel very strongly about this, actually.
It is unjustifiable and unconscionable to me.
I totally agree with you, and you've used the exact words that I would have used had you not used them. Mm. It is ridiculous that we're spending billions of pounds a year on people who come over in boats, most of them young males. If they come out of the hotels and they get asylum, are they likely to be able to get work with the jobless situation as it is anyway? And then in that case, they're going to be drawing unemployment benefit anyhow, which is going to put an even greater burden on the taxes.
Why do you suppose it is that we do not, and I know some of the service personnel have mental health issues, but just folk who want to try and put life together, we seem to fail them so regularly. Why do you suppose that is?
I honestly don't know because, I come from a different generation, frankly, and I grew up when things were totally different and people had respect for virtually everything, police, the medical services and all, everything under the sun. Nowadays, it seems to be inculcated into the culture that nobody has any respect for anything anymore.
How confident are you that we will try? This will at least start to alleviate the tens of thousands of people who are sleeping rough, the hundreds of thousands of people who are homeless. Lastly, Michael.
Right, well, what I would think is to take over specific hotels where the homelessness is worse, possibly in London, and then take the immigrants, particularly illegal immigrants, the one who've come over in a boat, take them out of the hotels, stuff them, blow them, and put the homeless people who deserve it, who've been on waiting lists for years with children, put them in the hotels.
Let's see if others agree. Michael, thank you for your input. I have to finish you there, because I need to get to the news headlines. We will return to that conversation and also David Lammy's plans to wipe out juvenile criminal records. 9:45 now, though, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Resident doctors in England are being balloted on a new offer aimed at averting a pre-Christmas strike. Ministers have announced a target to halve long-term rough sleeping by the next election. And there's been another sharp escalation in tensions between the US and Venezuela. LBC weather dry and bright for many places, but becoming cloudier later, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M40 is closed northbound between junctions 2 at Beaconsfield and 4 at High Wycombe. It's following an accident involving a number of vehicles. So the road is closed and there are delays on the approach and on the surrounding routes, especially the A40 and the A404 Marlow Hill. North Circular Road's very busy going towards the Ilford flyover. There's been an accident and it's causing queues back to the Barking flyover. In Tottenham, there are delays on the High Road. This is both ways following an accident right near to Northumberland Park. Still no Gatwick Express trains. They remain suspended. And also on the trains, London North Western and Avanti West Coast services are delayed by about half an hour between Euston and Milton Keynes Central.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
David Lammy wants to wipe the record clean of young offenders and Lisa Nandy wants to reopen many youth clubs. Can you see the link between these two stories?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Oh, how relaxing was that yoga session? I feel so free.
Speak for yourself. I can never let go.
Bladder leaks. I know, right? I'm so done compromising. I got a new bit of yoga kit. Always discreet pads. Here, try for yourself next week.
Love you lots, but this thin pad won't keep up with my heavy leaks.
Just trust me on this one. So, all zen and liberated, are we?
Let's just say I found my flow.
Always discreet. Live with no compromise.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Train to Brighton with the besties.
Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, I'm going up.
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
To be honest, work had been a slog. I'm a designer, but some nights I was chasing invoices like my full-time job. Now Sage Copilot chases my invoices for me. I just need to click a button and it's done. And I get paid 1 week faster.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping real businesses like Sophia at Solver Design. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. Working with 21 customers, each round payments came in 7 days faster with Sage Copilot. T's and C's apply.
With Lloyd's Home Insurance, there's £50,000 to be won. When you cover the glassware no one's actually allowed to use, or the garden shed, aka your fortress of calm. Rated excellent on Trustpilot, you can be confident with your cover when you take out a new home insurance policy and be in for a chance to win £50,000. Get a quote with Lloyd's today. Buy a new home insurance policy direct from us by the 31st of December 2025. Offer T's and C's apply. Policy terms, limits and exclusions apply.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at two. We said three. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Talk more about homelessness with you, Hugh. Hugh. If you are the Hugh, I think you are Hugh. But Catherine's in Muswell Hill, been hanging on for some time to talk about justice or the idea of wiping out, expunging, I love that word, expunging these criminal records for juveniles. And I think you work in the field of law, is that correct? Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm formerly a criminal defence solicitor. I've also worked in mental health law and I now work in adult forensic mental health services, which is people who've come through the criminal justice system and are now in the mental health system. Now...
Oh, no. Catherine.
Yeah.
Sorry, your client, I think you might have pressed a button. You just finished what you said and then your line went. So we just got you that people come through the criminal justice system. Can you pick it up from there?
Of course. Yeah. And then they come into the mental health system because they're found to be suffering from mental ill health, from mental illness.
Okay.
There is, needless to say, a massive over-representation of people who have had some contact with the criminal justice system at some point in their youth, long before they came adults. And it's not difficult to understand why that might be. Now,
well, to explain to the bear in mind, Catherine, your experience in this field, just for me and other listeners, explain the relevance there for us.
Because if you have contact with the criminal justice system when you're a young person, you are far more likely, it has a sort of centrifugal effect, you're far more likely to end up staying connected to it in some way or other. So from an individual basis, it seems just beyond, you know, beyond common sense to think, well, if someone commits a relatively minor offence when they are 13, 14, 15, what we actually want to do is never see them again. And if we never want to see them again in the criminal justice system, we have to show them the exit and allow them to leave without a digital footprint that will follow them for the rest of their lives and impact all sorts of issues, most obviously employment, but other issues as well. Because the more contact you have, the less likely you are going to be able to stand on your own feet and, you know, live the life that we all want, you know, everyone to lead for ourselves and for others. That's on an individual basis. On a societal and economic analysis, it's also beyond common sense, because having people locked up, whether in psychiatric units or whether in prisons, is extremely expensive.
Yep.
And not only does it cost a lot, but it's also a loss to the economy. It's yet another person who can't work, who can't contribute. So David Lammy, and I don't often think that David Lammy is right, but I do think he's right on this. It, you know, people,
but where are we going to draw, as a legal professional, Catherine, sorry to talk over you, but I've only got a few minutes left now for the show.
Of course.
Where does the line drawn? Because, you know, I'll refer you to the James Bulger case and things such as that. We must never, ever, of course, wipe that that criminal record.
There is always... OK, what I would say about that is what I would say about literally every other issue you cover. Namely, it's about a balancing of risks and harms. And that requires, a detailed process of looking at where you might put that, you know, where you might draw that line. I haven't got a pat answer for you.
We were wrestling with this with an earlier caller, and I came up top of the head stuff, Catherine. If it's an offence that attracts a tariff of 20 years or something such as that, is that at least a starting point for a conversation?
Absolutely. I mean, if it's something that attracts a 20-year tariff, then obviously when you are thinking about how do I assess the risk, then you have to think, well, this is a very serious offence that this young person has committed.
Yep.
You know, much as I would love that young person to be well again, to you know, do their time and then move on into some kind of productive adult life, I also have to think about the potential harm that that person poses to the society around them.
All right.
And that's going to be in your calculation.
Lastly, your view, aside from this, of David Lammy as Justice Secretary, I would imagine it's not going to be that favourable.
I mean, I was very happy to hear this particular announcement this morning. On the issue of jury trials, I mean, that's a whole other long conversation. You know, I worked in the criminal justice system when it was a very high-functioning, fantastic area of law to get into. A lot of people who are in, you know, my sort of cohort wanted to work in it because it was a brilliant area to work in. It's now absolutely on its knees. I can't blame David Lammy for that, but it's just been decades of neglect. And what I would like to hear from David Lammy is a sort of more honest appraisal of where, and it's not only the criminal justice system, the civil law is no better.
I must leave it there. Catherine, thank you for that, and thanks for all your experience in the field. David Gregsby says, your call with Jason, if you weren't listening, by the way, he had the most extraordinary life of crime and has gone straight, was fantastic. As a former JP, I would only consider a defendant's offending for the previous 10 years. Louise said that caller Jason should write a book. What an interesting guy. On the subject of rough sleeping, John in Maidstone, has this government noticed the shanty town that's developing in Park Lane and decided to spend more money on them, but turned a blind eye to the hundreds of ex-service personnel who sleep rough, who are ignored? I think those people in their tents actually have moved more towards the Euston Road now. This comes in, same subject, Brian in Gloucester. My army experience helped me change from a drifter to a university professor. This is in relation to an earlier call. And do please mention the SSAFA, which is, of course, a service charity. On the subject of homelessness, Hugh in Battersea, I think it's the one I know. Good morning, Hugh.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you again for shining a light on behalf of our veterans.
Not at all.
I'm listening, obviously, as I always do every morning, and I just want to just explain to your listeners, there are 5.1 million veterans and their family members who also get affected by the aftermath of war, etc.
Of course.
And we have a mental health tsunami on the horizon. And let me explain why.
Please.
We went into Iraq in 2008, and then we pulled out of Afghanistan disastrously in 2019. PTSD has a gestation period of about 14 years.
Oh, good gracious.
So now, run good the numbers God. On the 5.1 million, and, you know, 2019, we haven't reached that 14-year point yet. Now, what I would like to highlight for any veteran or indeed spouse partner who's got challenges at home with the other half, there are two NHS pathways. Op Restore for veterans with physical injuries and Op Courage for those with mental challenges. And I have been on the latter and it really helped me. Mm. But the problem is, Nick, as always, you know what I'm going to say. Comes down to money and funding.
Yeah.
And when you get onto OPCA, I had to wait months to get onto OPCourage. Luckily, I had a support structure around me, et cetera, helping me, but many don't.
Of course.
And so they turn to self-medication, and end up drinking or using substances to take away the pain. We need more money and more funding into these pathways. And we need to promote them. Most, Tommy Atkins in Grimsby, I guarantee you, will not know how to access Op Courage or Op Restore.
Hugh, the light bulb went on the minute you said a word like tsunami, I thought, I'm going to have to challenge this because it's an emotive word. What's he got to back it up? And then you were already ahead of me and you backed it up. So you're aware of it. And I'm sure the charity you work with, are people in government aware of this?
Yeah, I mean, Nick, I wanted to if I politely just push back, I run a business called We Serve.
That's right.
And it's a digital marketplace that offers jobs, training. We're about to launch an amazing healthcare and well-being service.
Right.
So veterans who sign up for free, and they can have 5 members of their family sign up, can access all these services through our platform.
I've got to go in 45 seconds. When are you launching that?
January.
Right. Talk to my colleague when I say farewell, and we'll put you in so that you appear on that date. Lastly, in 30 seconds, you're aware of it. How aware are the necessary parties in government of the tsunami, as you termed it?
Yeah, well, I think they are aware of it, and We Served is working with the NHS already, but they need more counsellors. They need more resources. Otherwise, the statistics are just going to go up and up, I'm afraid. And that's why I say thank you. Thank you, Nick, for, shining the light.
All right, my friend. Well, we'll do more on that when we talk in January, when you launch that We Serve, and I look forward to that, and I will leave it there. Because thank you again, Hugh, and for the work you do, by the way, and for your service, but I'm done. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. You can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions, put your news categories in the order that you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it for me, James O'Brien, the other side of the news on LBC. I'm with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, do stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 7 o'clock, and here's the thing. There were 2 stories. 10 o'clock, what did I say? 7 o'clock. Well, it's nearly Christmas. I'm ready for a holiday. I don't know about anybody else. The time is approaching 10 o'clock. I just got edited by Nick Ferrari for the first time, I think. Fantastic. Thank you. Send me an invoice. I saw 2 stories this morning that I spotted a link in, and I was quite pleased to see the link. I like links. And then I spotted a third, and then I spotted a fourth. 4 stories that speak to something similar. 1 about David Lammy's proposal to wipe the juvenile criminal records that you've been hearing about this morning. Another about the number of people arrested who turn out to have ADHD. 1 about Britain's youth unemployment, and the other about youth clubs.
On your radio,
on the LBC app and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, health officials have warned the NHS is facing a worst-case scenario of flu cases. Latest figures for England show more than 2,600 patients were in hospitals with the illness each day last week. That is a 55% increase on the previous 7 days, with a similar sharp spike in norovirus. Dr. Bharat Pankhania is a public health expert at the University of Exeter.
We have an early start to the seasonal influenza season. Furthermore, we have a mismatch between the vaccine and the circulating virus. And as a result of that mismatch, there is reduced protection.
Resident doctors are considering an offer aimed at ending months of strike action in England. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting's fresh deal includes an expansion of training posts, but no movement on pay. Medics who will vote on the deal in the coming days are due to walk out for 5 days from next Wednesday. The Homelessness Ministers told LBC that no children should be housed in B&Bs. Alison McGovern set out a new £3.5 billion strategy, including a promise to stop children growing up in temporary accommodation.
The figure that I am most bothered about as I'm sat here talking to you is the 2,000 children who are in B&B accommodation and have been for more than 6 weeks this Christmas. That is already unlawful and has been for 20 years. And if we do nothing else, we have to reduce that number.
The plan also includes a target to cut long-term rough sleeping by half in 5 years. The White House has released footage of US troops storming an oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela. Officials say it was carrying sanctioned oil, but it marks another sharp escalation in tensions between the countries. The US has carried out a series of deadly strikes on drug traffickers in the Caribbean in recent weeks. The former Conservative MP Ben Bradley has defected to Reform UK. The party says Mr. Bradley, who lost his seat last year, will become its head of local government action. And the winners of the first ever Global Player Awards have been announced. The news agents won Best Podcast Show. Christiane Amanpour presents The X-Files with Jamie Rubin, picked up the biggest new podcast. You can see the full list of winners on Global Player. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 10 points at 96.66. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, dry and bright for many places this morning, then becoming cloudier through the day with rain arriving in Northern Ireland and Western Scotland. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
This Christmas at Tesco, get selected meat joints and boneless salmon sides better than half price with your Tesco Club card. That's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland. Beef and lamb ends 28th of the 12th, hawk 6th of the 1st, gammon 13th of the 1st, salmon 1st of the 1st, club card required.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
I think we're up to five. I think I've got five stories now that are all very current and all speak to something similar. I like that phrase. Is it one of the ones you hate? You know, when language changes ever so slightly and you haven't noticed why until you suddenly notice and you think that you dislike it because it's new. Because we all hate new things, remember? Especially when you get older, you hate new things. And then you stop and think about it, and you quite like it. And I've caught myself using this one quite a lot in ways that I never would have used 10 years ago. It speaks to. So an idea speaks to an event speaks to an idea. So these are five stories, all speak to something similar. They speak to the same theme. Hard to pin down. I really like that turn of phrase. I realise, and I make no apologies to you if you hate it. I will convert you, I promise, but it may take time. But there are five stories in the news this week, mostly today, partly yesterday, that all, to me, seem to speak to something quite similar. You have David Lammy proposing to wipe juvenile criminal records. You have Lisa Nandy speaking of the violent indifference that youths have faced for years. You have youth unemployment in the UK rising faster at the moment than anywhere else in the G7. The figures are heartbreaking. We've done a lot on this sort of subject lately, but the evidence continues to amass up to about 15%. from about 11 in the key category. So you've got the youth clubs that Lisa Nandy is keen to resurrect. You've got the criminal records that David Lammy is keen to excise. You've got the youth unemployment that statistics tell us is rising faster than in any other G7 country. And then the two stories that are not immediately part of the same pattern, but which I think very much are. We begin with the possibility, it is only that because these things are rather hard to pin down, but the possibility that about half of people arrested at any given time may have ADHD, may be on that particular spectrum. And the final one, oddly, is the social media ban that has come in Australia now, and which we have also talked about earlier this week. And what do they all have in common? Elements of it are fairly obvious, but let me try and paint you a picture. Let me try and plot a spider's web of how these five stories are interlinked and interwebbed, if that's even a word. Some of it's quite obvious. If you are caught young enough, and provided with some inspiration and or guidance that you are not finding anywhere else, most obviously at school or at home, and that might be partly through an unfortunate set of circumstances, a dereliction of duty, or it may just be bad luck. You know, it might be that you derive enormous pleasure from team games, and you can't really get into team games at home, and your school has sold its playing fields. I'm clicheing slightly, but it might not be evidence of deprivation or poverty or lack of privilege. It might just be bad luck. The point is that a hub, a youth club, can provide you with something that inspires you for the rest of your life. At the moment, at 10:07, that's probably going to be the basis of my first question to you this morning, but that, it would seem to me, makes you less likely to go off the rails later. If you have ADHD, then you become measurably more likely to go off the rails later. That's a question we may be looking into later, the question of why that is. For those of us who don't really understand, it would be very helpful for those of us that do to simply explain why we think the incidence of people in prison disproportionately reflects people believed to have or likely to have ADHD. So those two things are fairly obvious. The social media ban plays into this, because what are they supposed to do now that they're not on social media all day? I don't know that anybody really clings to the notion that social media, particularly for teenagers, has been an unalloyed good. You know, oh, I don't know what everybody's talking about. It's fantastic. You don't even get the sort of myopic self-interest perspective on this when people argue that, well, it didn't do me any harm, therefore it can't possibly be doing anybody else any harm either. It's a helpful trope if you're a right-wing newspaper columnist, but it doesn't seem to make much sense anywhere else in the human race. Well, it hasn't affected me, therefore it must not exist. Imagine saying that about flu. Imagine being in the middle of a flu epidemic, as we are at the moment, and finding someone who hasn't got flu and therefore is convinced that everybody else is faking it, or everybody else is making it up, or indeed that flu doesn't exist. I'm not even joking, because we kind of had that during COVID, didn't we, in many ways, when the stakes were so much higher. But we all kind of agree that teenagers' access to social media is more bad than good. And we all kind of hope that Australia's ban on access to some of these platforms for under-16s works. I'm really keeping a very, very close eye on that in the hope that it will work. But it speaks to the youth clubs and to a lesser extent to the ADHD, because, of course, what will people do? Especially perhaps people with short attention spans. What will young people do now that their access to social media faces possible closure? Number four, I think, is obvious. David Lammy wants to wipe the records of people who committed crimes in their youth. Now, it's actually probably the least tangential, or the most tangential, of these five stories.